hasn't agreed with Baroness Casey's conclusion that the police force over which he presides has institutional problems. Institutional racism, institutional misogyny. I think we should probably have a crack at defining precisely what we understand that word to mean, and then we can consider whether or not Mark Rowley is a doubling down on a rather silly mistake.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the head of the Metropolitan Police has told LBC there will be fast-track proceedings to sack officers caught in an undercover sting. Footage shows officers based at Charing Cross bragging about using force and making racist and sexist comments. Those involved have been suspended. Sir Mark Rowley, who has issued an apology, has described it as ghastly behaviour.
In our sort of anti-corruption command, many of the SIOs, the senior investigating officers in our counter-corruption command, have got organised crime and counter-terrorism experience. And we will keep going until it's gone. I believe the progress we've made so far, this nearly 1,500 who've gone, I've got rid of a lot of noise out of the system. I've cleared out a lot of the legacy of people who should have been thrown out some time ago. And now we're digging deeper into those tumours that are buried in the organisation.
But Sir Mark has again declined to describe the Met as institutionally racist and misogynistic. Sir Keir Starmer is to discuss plans to reform the asylum system at a meeting of European leaders. They include changing the requirements for long-term settlement and ending refugees' automatic right to bring their families to the UK. Leaders will also discuss the war in Ukraine at the talks in Copenhagen this morning. A Conservative frontbencher has urged Michelle Mohn to resign from the House of Lords. A company linked to Baroness Mohn, who's had the Tory whip suspended, has been ordered to repay £122 million for breaching a pandemic-era contract. The Shadow Energy Secretary, Claire Coutinho, has called on her to relinquish her peerage. The British government says it's very concerned about Israel's interception of an aid flotilla bound for Gaza. A number of the 44 boats taking part have been stopped from reaching the territory. Israeli authorities say it was done so safely, with passengers taken to the port of Ashdod. A group of Thames Waters lenders has put forward a new rescue deal. The firm, which remains on the brink of nationalisation, could see some of its £20 billion debt pile written off. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 9 at 94.55. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 14. LBC weather cloudy with rain for many places but drier in the southeast. A high of 20 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Sean has had some good ideas over the years, but using Canva was a really good one. Sean designed some social posts to promote his friend's car boot sale. They looked good. Really, really good. Next thing he knows, someone came and bought the lot, including the car. Now Sean doesn't know how he's going to get home.
Thanks, Canva.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Minutes after 10 is the time, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Don't forget that there was loads of it. Michelle Mohn and her husband suffer the misfortune, if you like, or certainly in her case, of being by far the most famous of the individuals involved in these so-called VIP lanes and sundry other scam-adjacent behaviours. But remember that that cronyism, that sort of potential corruption ran through that administration with Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings at the top of it, like Blackpool through a stick of rock. And never forget all of the people in my line of work who encouraged you to look the other way or get your little Boris Johnson flag out and wave it furiously every morning and ignored completely the obvious evidence that we were once again packaging up our country for the worst, the very, very worst of us. But I can't think of a phone-in at the moment, so feel free to suggest. You can produce the second hour of the programme today, should you so desire. If you can think of a way into the Michelle Mohn scandal, then I will be all ears. You can WhatsApp me on 0345 6060973 or text 84850. Two things, really. One is a bit of a confession. I have in the past conducted conversations on this radio program. Almost forgot what it was there. I have in the past conducted conversations on this radio program about documentary programs on the television, possibly even about undercover investigations into police officers and police stations without having watched the whole program. I hope I've always been honest with you about that. I hope I've always said to you, well, I've seen the clips, and the clips are often so compelling and comprehensive that you don't really need to see the whole program. But on this occasion, I have actually watched the whole thing. I don't know why. It wouldn't normally be my choice of viewing, but the producer of this alleged entertainment mentioned to me yesterday, because it was in the newspapers, that the Met was braced for a bit of a scandal. And I just popped up. I watched. I tell you what, my favourite programme in recent years is The Equaliser, starring Queen Latifah. So I was watching one at Mrs. O'Brien's away for a few days, so my television viewing habits tend to head somewhat downwards very, very quickly. The Equaliser with Queen Latifah, if you've never seen it, I'd put it up there with Quantum Leap in my all-time favourites. The way that each self-contained episode just reaches parts that other television So anyway, I watched an episode of that, and then I watched Panorama. Panorama came round subsequently, and I didn't think I'd get to the end, because I've seen it all before. But, and this is probably a testament to the program making as well as the filth, the quality of the filth that they uncovered among, I used that word accidentally actually, because of course the police used to be referred to as the filth, but that was an entirely unintentional pun. The quality, if you like, or the horrific nature of the footage was incredibly compelling, but I also think there was a really good bit of filmmaking going on there. It was put together in a really powerful way. And I watched it, and my jaw hit the floor. Again. I'm going to tell you something completely unrelated now. Even more unrelated than The Equaliser with Queen Latifah. I was coming back from tennis yesterday, and I was with my playing partner, one of my playing partners, and I saw some gloves on the ground, some children's mittens on the ground. So I picked them up and I put them on the railings on the fence. You do that, right, if you're a good citizen. I put them on the railings on the fence, and he said, you probably think there's a secret camera around, don't you? You're only doing that to look good. And I thought, good Lord, that does occasionally cross my mind. Just at the strangest of times, you sort of think, you find yourself doing something nice and then thinking, gosh, I hope I'm doing this for the right reasons and not just because I want to appear to be nice. Or you can't find yourself thinking, what if there's a hidden camera over there and I've just walked past that homeless person and I haven't stopped to say hello or even give them a cup of tea or offer to buy them a sandwich? What if they do? Just a weird little, it's not a paranoia, it doesn't happen every day, but it's a thing, right? I'm not the only one that does it. I checked this morning, you do just occasionally think, it'd be great advice to give to somebody in a police station, behave as if one of your colleagues has got a secret camera. And it's a shame, because it doesn't actually address the poison inside you, the racism, the misogyny, whatever it may be, but it's quite a good bit of advice. Always behave as if the producer has got a secret camera. Never do anything that you wouldn't be happy for your neighbours to sit down and watch when you're at work. And, I mean, at home as well, probably, but that's really good advice. And you would have thought by now that the Metropolitan Police would have learned that the likelihood of somebody either reporting on their misconduct or even recording their misconduct was a little bit higher than it is for, you know, the average bus driver or the average accountant. One of the moments in the thing last night, the Panorama last night, and to be absolutely clear, the questions that I've got coming do not depend upon having seen the programme, okay? But one of the elements of it was that one of the particularly unpleasant police officers did actually make jokes about the undercover reporter being a secret journalist filming him. And he was brilliant, this lad, this undercover reporter, because he didn't just sort of laugh it off. He almost built upon the joke. He sort of became part of the joke and came back to it. He circled back to it I think that's called comedic recall, when a comedian goes back to a joke that you laugh at even more because you feel that you're in on something, because you can remember the reference point that they're going back to. So he sort of circled back to the joke that he might be filming this bloke who was just... And they kept saying in the commentary, 2 pints in, 5 pints in, and obviously with every pint, some inhibitions disappear. And on it goes. Until you get the... I mean, some of the stuff was hideous, and some of it... I don't know what word you'd use. So some of the stuff... If you have a threshold of criminality in some cases, the violence, I think, very much could see criminal charges being brought. So you've got various thresholds when you're watching this stuff. There's a threshold of criminality that is probably being breached. And there's a threshold of offence, which is quite subjective. Some people will find some things more offensive than other things, and other people will find those things more offensive than those things. So that's not an objective thing. Then I haven't got the right word to describe the third threshold. It's a sort of... It's a sense of being polluted. It's different from being offended. It's being disgusted. There we go. A disgust threshold. And one character in particular breached the disgust threshold in a million different ways. A custody sergeant who ran towards the reception area when it emerged that a woman dressed as a police officer had arrived there under the influence. And he was joking about it and joking about paying in clubs to... And it was just disgusting. And those are the moments that make you wonder what you'd have done. You know, very, very few of us have ever left a room or reported a colleague or registered disgust at the disgusting conduct of a colleague or a friend or a family member. Family members more likely. You know, your Uncle Bob says something racist at Christmas, you can, well, in the good old days, you would call him out on it. But at work, particularly in a workforce with a hierarchy, if the disgusting stroke offensive stroke borderline criminal thing is being done by somebody who commands institutional respect, then you're not going to call it out unless you're a particularly courageous character. And I use that word institutional very, very advisedly, because the first thing we're going to work at together is what it means. What is the difference between institutional racism and misogyny and having a racist colleague or seven? Have a little listen to the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, Mark Rowley. I think, and for the record, not that it matters, and I'm sure he doesn't care, I think he's doing a pretty good job as Metropolitan Police Commissioner, generally. But on this, I think he's getting it really, really wrong. But I want to know what you think. Let's have a little listen to him responding to last night's programme and reflecting, perhaps, poorly on the importance of words and definitions.
Following the publication of the Casey Report in 2023, you refuse to describe the force as institutionally misogynistic, racist and homophobic. Are you ready to change your mind?
The institution of the Met is bearing down on all these problems at the moment, and hence the results and things I said to you there. The most important thing is I recognise, and I've been really clear, that there are deep systemic issues that go back over decades, that not just failures in regulations, failures in leadership, failures in culture, failures in vetting, a whole pattern of things that have created a too comfortable environment that has created the volume of problem that we've been rooting out. But we're showing as an organisation how determined we are. And the fact I've got 1,400 men and women who've stepped forward in recent years to report their colleagues shows how collectively determined we are to deal with this. Frankly, the words I use aren't that important. Different commissioners have used different words. Some have used the institutional racism phrase, some haven't. That's not what's going to change things. It's the action, it's the hard, sharp action we're taking that is making progress. But as I say, I'm not any illusion there's more to do.
Okay, you're not going to say you're institutionally racist, homophobic,
no.
Misogynist. You're not prepared to say that?
No.
Okay.
But you are. Does it matter? Well, if 1,400 of your colleagues are coming forward to report institutional racism, homophobia and misogyny in your workforce, then yeah, of course it flipping matters. If there are four of them, in a workforce of tens of thousands, then yeah, okay, let's not try and tar everybody with the same brush. But if you want to fix an institutional problem, you have to call it an institutional problem. And I want to start today by asking you to tell me what you think that means. So we have all worked with racist colleagues. We have all worked probably with misogynists. But we have not all worked in an institutionally racist workforce. We have not worked in an institutionally misogynistic or homophobic workforce. I wonder, and as I prepare to ask you this question, I'm wondering whether possibly for be one of those very, very rare moments when I'm asking a bit too much of you. What's the difference? What's the difference between having a racist colleague, as I have had in the course of my career, even in the course of this job, having a misogynistic colleague, and working in an institutionally racist or misogynistic workplace? What's the difference? I really, really can't wait to hear what you have to say to this, because I'm not 100% sure. I think I know, or I certainly have some inklings about what it may be, but I've never actually contemplated the question in quite such a clear fashion. We have all, or almost all, encountered a racist colleague, worked with a racist colleague, being compelled to work with one person or two people who are racist. You know, Nigel Farage, of course, described by The Sun as engaging in racism pure and simple in 2014. A few years later, he became a presenter on this program, on this radio station. So being compelled to have a colleague who engages in racist behavior. We've all been there. But that didn't make us institutionally racist. What would have made us well, maybe you think that it did. What is the difference between institutional racism, institutional misogyny and institutional homophobia, and having the misfortune of having one or two racist, misogynistic or homophobic colleagues? I want to be absolutely clear. There is a difference. There clearly is a difference. And whether Mark Rowley fails, refuses, or simply doesn't want to acknowledge that difference, I do not know. But once we've got a clearer picture, perhaps, of what that difference is, we can move on and move into the question of how important it is that Mark Rowley refuses to acknowledge the institutional nature. Or, if he's using a word like systemic, maybe you'll argue that it doesn't actually matter. In which case, what's the point of employing people like Baroness Casey to conduct inquiries if the head of the organisation that she's conducted an inquiry into refuses to recognise even the syntax of her conclusion? But that's the question. That's the question. What's the difference between working in an institutionally racist organisation versus having one or three racist colleagues? 0345 6060 973.
LBC.
For stunning retirement apartments to buy or rent, search McCarthy Stone or call 0800 153 3055.
Play Set for Life from the National Lottery. Winners get 10K every month for 30 years. You could win on repeat. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Big, big, big motoring world. Wow, wow, wow motoring world.
Yes, that's right. Big Motoring World is also Wow Motoring World because we price check our cars every day to guarantee you our best price with up to 95% of them below market value. Big Motoring World. We're big on what matters to you. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
19 after 10. Let's just run through some of the revelations from last night's panorama, which you definitely don't have to have watched to contribute to the conversation we're about to have. Sergeant Joe McElvenny, an officer with nearly 20 years' service in the Met. That's relevant to this conversation about what is institutional, because it's highly unlikely that the only times he's ever engaged in the sort of behaviour that was filmed by Panorama is when he was being filmed by Panorama. There could well be a 20-year record of this kind of conduct, particularly dismissive, contemptuous even, of a pregnant woman's allegations of rape and domestic violence. Colleague particularly put out that the suspect was being released on bail, to which this fella's response was, well, we've only got her word for it. If you're going to use that as a basis of policing, then no one would ever be refused bail, would they? Another one, Martin Borg, described how he saw another officer, known as Stampy, stomp on a suspect's leg. He laughed when he was describing how he'd offered to make a statement, saying that the suspect had tried to kick the sergeant first. Not clear from CCTV footage if the claim was true, but it was definitely true that he'd said, if you need me to lie on your behalf, then I will. PC Phil Nielsen told a reporter in the pub, and as I mentioned a moment ago, the inhibitions dissipated as the beer was consumed, that a detainee who had overstayed his visa should have a bullet through his head. And then there's a couple of things I can't actually repeat on the radio without falling foul of Ofcom rules. As I mentioned, there's violence, particularly towards a young person who was described as autistic. And then there's the disgusting conduct. There's the offensive, the disgusting, and the criminal. And it was endemic. It was completely normal in this workplace. And that is why I wonder what you think the difference is between having colleagues who are racist, homophobic and misogynistic, and working for an organisation that is institutionally racist, homophobic and misogynistic. Andrew's in Lanark. Andrew, what would you like to say?
Hi, mate. This is a really, really difficult one. I normally have got a good idea in my head what I want to say to you when I come on, but I'm really struggling with this. So I can't say everything I want to say, because otherwise Sheila will be waiting to start.
Go on. I don't know what you mean by that. See, that made me slightly uncomfortable. I don't know why, but...
Sorry.
That's all right. I just crack on, because it's not ideal to have the first caller who doesn't know what he wants to say, but needs must.
Right. Okay, first of all, former police officer, worked in a very, very, what we would call hardcore area of the country. Lots of crime, lots of confrontation, lots of physical intervention. And when it's necessary, it's necessary. However, I never saw what I watched last night, behaviour from a custody sergeant. His job is to protect, look after the welfare of anybody in his custody. Mm. So I just want to brush over him, because he's not my main point, but that guy, disgrace. But anyway.
Just before you brush over it, actually intrinsic to the question that I'm asking, because he won't be representative of all or even most custody sergeants, but the fact that he behaved with an air of impunity, he wasn't expecting to be pushed back against or to be told off or certainly to be reported or any of those things. Yes. That, for me, is when you start moving into territory described as institutional. The confidence with which he can behave like that means that he is in an environment that accommodates that kind of attitude and that kind of behaviour. And if that's not institutional, then I don't know what is.
Well, you said that better than I could, and I'm glad you said that, because that was what I was struggling to get over. But here's your presenter, your researcher, your producer said to me, the question is, when is it institutional, and when is it just... And I think the answer is, and from a very personal experience I had, when it's seen, it's not challenged properly. Yeah. When I joined, it was just after that horrendous Stephen Lawrence incident, which I don't even want to think about. The police, from that point and from what I've seen today, from that point till now, what they've been doing is they're trying to make... They're more worried about what the image is to the public. Right, how can we appear not to be racist? well, let's do some positive discrimination in recruiting. Let's do this. And that just makes it worse. That makes people resent other people because they think you're only getting what you've got because of the colour of your skin. So that made it worse. So they're incompetent at it. But I'm guilty of contributing to that. I was a young probationer. Well, I was a probationer. I wasn't young. I was 31. I just got out of the army.
Well, it's young now.
And I was with an officer. Once I'd finished being tutored by my constable, I then go independent so I can work with different officers on the shift, get more experience. I worked with this guy on a set of nights, five nights on the bounce, and by night two, by afternoon two, I was going home at night and talking to my wife at the time and saying, I don't know what I'm going to do with this guy. She said, well, I said, he's an absolute blatant racist. I never come across, we don't have racists in there, well, not in with the army I was in, because everybody's, we're all brothers. We all look after each other. I've never experienced it. And it went on for 2 or 3 days where I really, really was at my wit's end with what to do. And I went into the locker room after shift at 10 o'clock at night. I won't go into too much detail, but he got involved in an incident with a guy at the side of the road, Afro-Caribbean guy. And what he did, and with the way he spoke, after that incident had been rectified, and I managed to sort it and get the guy away, I said to the guy behind the officer's back, I said, please, 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 you've got to help me. This guy's a racist. I'm new, and I'm going to have to deal with it. I said, but if you fight him now, I'm going to have to arrest you, and I don't want to do it. So please, I'm begging you, just go. He's behaved appallingly, and I am going to deal with it.
I'm going to hurry you up a bit because there's loads of people waiting. Did you reported him? And the key question,
no,
you didn't.
No, I didn't.
You didn't report your colleague. That's why you describe yourself as being part of the problem.
I went to the locker room that night, got changed, and was looking miserable. And one of the guys says, "Is everything all right?" I said, "No." They said, "What's happened?" And I told him. I says, "What am I going to do? There's 30 people on this shift.
Yeah.
I'm going to be ostracised." He said, "Oh, that's just so and so. He's a racist." So-and-so.
Well, that's where it begins to feel institutional, isn't it? That you think you're going to be ostracised. It's so bizarre that it was only this week we were introduced to the notion of this becoming a country where accusing someone of racism is seen as more scandalous behaviour than actually witnessing examples of racism, as you did. Andrew, I'm cracking on only because it's going to be a very busy hour. I'll pick up on one thing. It's not a hill I'm going to die on this morning, but positive discrimination is unlawful. What the Met practices and what all decent organisations should practice is attempts to increase representation of underrepresented parts of the community, because you want your police force to look like the community that you are policing. And it only becomes a bad thing when racists lie about it, which happens quite a lot. And a lot of perfectly decent people end up believing that it's a bad thing. But it's not. If you want your police force to look like the community that is being, to look like your community, then it is perfectly reasonable to make special efforts to do so. I'd heard something yesterday about, oh, people are always calling things racist. Why do they always call things racist? And then there was a story about the Bar Council trying to improve the representation of ethnic minorities so that the legal profession looks like the population of the country. And that was called racist by people who say, oh, they're always calling things racist these days. I thought, if you can't see that level of hypocrisy for yourself, then there's absolutely nothing I can do to help you. Andrew, thank you. Carl's in Croydon. Carl, what made you pick up the phone?
Good morning, James.
Hello, Carl.
Hello.
To be a copper, or you still are? I could tell by your voice.
Oh,
straight away. Is that a bad? You weren't undercover, were you?
Oh, no.
That's
no,
a
I'm
relief.
Not good at that.
Go on, sorry. What did you want to say?
I was a police officer in the Metropolitan Police for 14 years.
Right.
I just want to start by saying I do not defend or excuse the behaviour that's shown in that documentary. You know, it's wrong and it should be addressed.
Of course.
But I'm just really concerned about the way that this programme was made by the BBC.
Okay.
The tactics that were used and sort of the, you know, what the BBC did in sort of, you know, making their way or getting into custody and capturing that information and whether that should be addressed separately. But one of the key points, and I'm deeply worried about the mental health of police officers across the country. I just want to make it clear that British policing is on its knees. You know, the British media's got an obsession with fueling fear and scandal.
It's not an obsession with fueling fear. You have to see it from our side of the thin blue line. You are the people we should be able to rely upon most in a crisis.
Most definitely, James.
And the Sarah Everard case broke something. You can't say the British media is obsessed with fear and scandal. Unfortunately, it falls to journalists to police the police because they're doing such a bad job of policing themselves.
No, and I agree that more should be done to root out that. that behaviour and what takes place. I just think that we underestimate the impact it has on the vast majority of police officers and staff across the country that do a brilliant job each and every single day, and we don't seem to put that in the light. But just to go back to your question around, you know, the sort of difference. Yeah, the difference. And I think that I have a disability and, you know, I'm a white man. I've not been subject to racism, so I'm not going to empathise put myself in someone else's shoes. But if I look at my experience and I think that institutional racism, institutional problems that exist come from policies and processes that are not built with the people that they're designed to support or communicate with. So take the police national computer, for example. It looks at, you know, someone flashes on there, they can flash his mental health. But very little context is given as to what mental health can expand to. You know, there's so many different outcomes there. So if you as a police officer are going to a call and someone flashes mental health, well, then you have your preconceived notion of, well, the last 10 instances I've dealt with someone flashing mental health, they won't be violent.
Why is this relevant to the conversation that we're having today?
Well, I think it's relevant because I think it exists with sexism and misogyny and racism. I think that the problems, you know, and Baroness Casey found this in her review.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference. To answer your question, the difference is the systems and the processes that are built by senior leaders. And also and then the difference is that the individual actions by officers that you've seen in the BBC Panorama documentary, which are unacceptable. I just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
That is the difference in your conversation around those.
I think I understand. You've lost me a little bit with the, I don't know that we need to bring mental health into it as a sort of equivalent phenomenon to racism or misogyny. Ignorance, I suppose, can apply in all three cases. But the violence here directed at people with a disability, it's more about the violence than the disability, than the conduct, the reason why it is disgusting. 10:31 is the time. And that notion of institutional, you could now move away from it a little bit, because if it is just Charing Cross, for example, that is much, much worse than all other police stations. There's a lot of police officers getting in touch with me to tell me that they've never witnessed anything like this after 30 years of service. And then it is just some officers in that station. Maybe Mark Rowley's argument would be, I don't want to label every single member of the Metropolitan Police because of the conduct of a minority of officers in a minority of stations. That might be his logic. I don't know whether that works. Thank you, Carl. 10:31 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Some breaking news for you. I'm hearing that police are at the scene of a reported stabbing at a synagogue in Crumpsall in Greater Manchester. More detail on this as we get it. As I say, at the moment, that is pretty much all that is established. News headlines next with Thomas Watts.
As you've been hearing, police are at the scene of a reported stabbing at a synagogue in Greater Manchester. It's understood there could be multiple victims at the building in Crumpsall, and we'll bring you more details on LBC as we have them. The Metropolitan Police Commissioner has again declined to say the force is institutionally racist. Sir Mark Rowley was speaking to LBC after secret filming uncovered evidence of racism, misogyny and officers bragging about using force. A migration minister's told us that changes to the asylum system will create a level playing field with other countries in Europe. They include a tougher route to long-term settlement and ending refugees' automatic right to bring their families to Britain. LBC weather, cloudy with rain for many, drier in southeast England, a high of 20 degrees.
This is LBC.
Amazon has increased funding for employees to £3,000 a year every year for career development. Like Juliet, she's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £3,000 every year for career development at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
It's great up here in the London Eye. But imagine being inside. Perfect panoramic views of the capital from iconic pods.
Then get two Sun Super Days tickets to the London Eye. 34,000 available from £19 and thousands on the Sun for free.
Pick up the paper this Saturday to start collecting. Only in the Sun.
T's and C's apply. Even for seagulls.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Running a ceramic studio is all about balance, right, Nina?
Absolutely. That's why my business deserves the new iPhone 17 Pro. It can help me handle even the busiest workday, from planning my classes to keeping my kiln on track, so my business still holds shape.
The all-new iPhone 17 Pro, as pro as your work demands. Your business deserves the most powerful iPhone on EE, the UK's best network. BT and EE, better for business.
Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.
James O'Brien on LBC.
10:35 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. More on that incident in Manchester coming, of course, on Yom Kippur, the Jewish festival, the holiest day in the Jewish religious calendar, and so large numbers of Jewish people attending synagogue and fasting. Reports coming in just in the last half an hour of stabbings at a synagogue in Crumpsall, on Middleton Road in Crumpsall. The ambulance service in the northwest has declared a major incident, but I would add that the Mayor of London, Andy Burnham, has advised Manchester has advised listeners to avoid the area, but added, at the same time, I can give some assurance that the immediate danger appears to be over. That's Crumpsall in Manchester, Middleton Road in Crumpsall in Manchester. Back to London now, and the documentary programme last night on the BBC. I don't think I'm going to follow Carl's lead and have a conversation about whether or not it's appropriate for the BBC to be making these kind of programmes. What you do, I think, to ensure that incidents like this or ideas like this don't happen again in the future is you make sure that behaviour like this has been completely rooted out of the police service. And then if the BBC want to send someone in with a secret camera, they're not going to be able to film anything. They're certainly not going to be able to film police officer after police officer after police officers in hideous moments of both conduct and conversation. 10:36 is the time. Dan's in Leicester. Dan, what made you pick up the phone?
What made me pick up the phone is, first of all, very quickly, I have to say, James, I'm a black British guy, and I need to say what you do for us is crucial. You need to keep doing it. Your voice is powerful, and we need you out there in these times. I'm telling you right now, okay?
All right.
Serious is really important, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you for everything that you do and keep doing it. So for me, the difference between institutional racism and racism, I worked in a 999 call centre. I worked there for 18 months. I'm a black guy. And in a call centre of like 200 people, I was the only black guy there.
Yeah.
And there was an incident, I won't go into too much detail,
okay,
where somebody who was training me was seen to be speaking to me in a certain manner. They weren't using racist words, but they were talking to me in a certain way. Somebody else complained about it. It was looked into.
Yeah.
And how that was looked into, I felt like I was the one that was doing done something wrong. I had my two managers in front of me making me feel awkward. And because I worked within the police and it was institutional, that's how I felt. It was different to the other type of racism that I'd experienced at a previous job where I was there for 10 years, where somebody would say something like, oh, this year we're going to have a black Christmas tree instead of a green one. No offence.
Yeah.
So nobody's saying the N-word as such. And when I reported that, the manager sort of like stood up for me like, oh, ignore that idiot, you shouldn't have said that. And then they looked into it.
That's the phrase, isn't it? It's ignore that idiot.
Yeah.
That's not an institutional problem. But what you describe on the other side of your experience is institutional. It's somehow about how the organisation responds to the behaviour.
Yeah, like, I'd be walking in the hallways and a sergeant would say, oh, what's up, my brother?
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say that to anybody else. And it's not somebody saying the N-word, but you're making a point of, you know, that I'm black and you're saying that in that way.
And that, and it wouldn't cross his mind that that was a microaggression or that that would be offensive to you. He would probably even say that he was trying to be friendly because he thinks that's how you talk to each other, which is when you begin to realise what a prejudice it is. But that would be his thought process.
Yeah, I'd have that incidents like that. I'd hear jokes about Ethiopians starving and things like that, and just jokes that weren't the N-word. I'm thinking, you can see that I'm sitting here. Bearing in mind, this is a 999 call centre, and there's about 200 people within that particular department. I'm the only, if they're listening, they'll know who it is. I'm the only one that's there, and I'm hearing these things. And when my manager's looked into this incident of bullying that I faced with a trainer, to be fair, the Unison guy was fantastic.
Yeah.
He was saying, you need to go further with this. But me, I didn't have the strength to do it. I eventually just left the job, and now I've kind of regretted leaving it because I always wanted to go high in the police.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
That was the difference. That's
the institution. You left the institution. You didn't just move away from an idiot colleague. How important is it for Rowley to... because if he uses the word systemic, in some thesauruses, that's probably a synonym for institutional. Does it matter that he refuses to accept Baroness Casey's description of it as institutional, but will call it systemic? Does it matter?
Do you know what? Obviously, what? I don't speak for every black guy, but how things are at the moment, nothing matters. Honestly, it just feels like I've got a mixed race son. I'm worried for him growing up. The fact that Nigel Farage is out there saying this, and like when I'm shopping and I just catch a glimpse of Daily Mail cover, I'm not just blaming the Daily Mail. Most of the writing papers, and they're like, sure, "Oh, Sam, who's the nasty party now?" And I'm like,
just telling lies.
Nothing matters. When I hear these institutional guys going on, these police, it doesn't matter. It's like, what is the point? I've had this for. I'm 46 years old. All my life, I've had this BNP. All my life, and just when I'm thinking it's starting to end, it comes back again.
Hey, I get it. All right. I get it, but I know this is inadequate, and I know I said it 100 times yesterday. There's more of us than there is them, even if it sometimes feels different because they write the front pages of so many newspapers and have so many of the microphones. But there's more of us than there is of them. People who care about this stuff, Dan.
I don't care about me. It's my stuff.
Hey. Take it easy, all right?
Hey, it's my son and my daughter.
I know it is. I could tell. That's when your voice went. As soon as you thought of them and the way that this is yesterday's, I think that's probably why you opened with such kind words to me, because of yesterday's program. And that's what.
I was actually catching, because I work nights. I was catching up with yesterday's program, and I thought, oh, James is on now. Let me quickly listen. And I thought, oh God, right, we've got to listen to this. So I paused. I'm still halfway through yesterday's. I know that a lot of people call, and I don't want to take up the time. Right.
Sure.
But what I do want to say is, keep doing what you're doing. We need you, man. Just keep doing it, all right?
Well, it's
because we've got nobody else. We've got nobody else. Like, even for Keir Starmer to come out and say a few words, even when he says that, everybody's against him. I don't even like the guy. I don't even like Starmer. No wonder people are going to reform. I don't even like Starmer. But even when he says a few words and you think, finally, thank God, you've got people challenging that.
Yeah, and lying about it as well. I will. I mean, I would have done anyway, but if there was any doubt at all about me sticking on this line, I would be sticking on it now. 10:42 is the time. Dan, mind how you go. And I would talk to you for a little longer, but I'm very keen to talk to Helen Hoddinotter, LBC's reporter, about this reported stabbing at a synagogue in Manchester. Helen, what can you tell us?
So Greater Manchester Police say they're at the scene of this stabbing at a synagogue on Middleton Road in Crumpsall. Andy Burnham, the mayor of Greater Manchester, has just given an update and said four people have been injured in that attack. The police have just confirmed to me that the suspect did not gain access to the building and that he was shot at the scene by armed police. His condition at the moment isn't known, but he is believed to be alive. And the Mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, has been giving updates. He said a little bit earlier that it is a serious incident. He said to avoid the area and gave some reassurance immediately that the immediate danger appears to be over. He said the police have dealt with it very quickly with support from the public and also security at the location. Today is Yom Kippur. It is the holiest day in the Jewish religious calendar. It's when large numbers of Jewish people get together and attend synagogues. We've also had an update from Northwest Ambulance Service. It's at the scene of this major incident. They said following reports of this incident on Middleton Road in Crumpsall, the Trust has dispatched resources to the scene. They're currently assessing the situation and working with other members of the emergency services. But as I say, it is four people that we've just heard from the mayor that have been attacked at a synagogue in Manchester.
And as you say, four people injured and the suspect shot. Some confusion yet, as yet, over whether he is alive or dead. I see the BBC reporting Andy Burnham saying that the suspect is believed to be dead. And the police have released a statement in the last few seconds. Police were called to the Heaton Park Hebrew Congregation Synagogue on Middleton Road, Crumpsall, at 9:31 a.m. by a member of the public stating that he had witnessed a car being driven towards members of the public and one man had been stabbed. GMP declared Plato and a major incident at 9:37 a.m. Shots were fired by Greater Manchester Police firearms officers at 9:38 a.m. and one man has been shot, believed to be the offender. Paramedics arrived at the scene at 9:41 and are tending to members of the public. Currently four members of the public with injuries caused by both the vehicle and stab wounds. Members of the public are asked to avoid the area while the police continue to deal with the incident. And just to recap on that, the call was made by a member of the public at 9:31 a.m. and the suspect was shot at 9:37, six minutes later. More on this as the details emerge. 10:45 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Are we saying that it is okay for Reform to call Labour MPs names like Two-Tick Hero Rachel from Cats? I thought the point was people weren't happy with that either. But then the Labour Party, certainly the upper echelons of the Labour Party, performing a not dissimilar tactic, calling it the Farage boats. Is it part of the attack you want to see Labour mount against Nigel Farage and Reform? Because God knows there's a lot of ground to make up in the polls.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on Global Player and the LBC app.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
It's right up here in the London Eye.
But imagine being inside. Perfect panoramic views of the capital from iconic pods.
Then get two Sun Super Day stickers to the London Eye. 34,000 available from £19 and thousands on the Sun for free.
Pick up the paper this Saturday to start collecting. Only in the Sun.
T's and C's apply. Even for seagulls.
Running a ceramic studio is all about balance, right, Nina?
Absolutely. That's why my business deserves the new iPhone 17 Pro. It can help me handle even the busiest workday, from planning my classes to keeping my kiln on track, so my business still holds shape.
The all-new iPhone 17 Pro, as pro as your work demands. Your business deserves the most powerful iPhone on EE, the UK's best network. BT and EE, better for business.
Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance. Stayshore is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more five-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So Stayshore with Stayshore Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of five-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at stayshore.co.uk/reviews.
That quiet moment behind the wheel. The perfect space to get your thoughts in order. With the stylish HRV Hybrid, you get the head-turning design you want with the space and flexibility you actually need. Because every journey matters. Explore the full Honda range online at honda.co.uk. Honda, the power of dreams.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10:48 is the time. The breaking news at this moment involves a reported stabbing at a synagogue in Manchester. The suspect's report has been shot within 6 minutes of the original call being made, which gives some indication of the threat level described. We've got a live blog on the LBC webpage as this incident develops. Please God, it is now concluded, but four people injured reportedly and the suspect shot by officers. More on that as it happens, but the Mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, has described the immediate danger as being over. And in some ways, it puts a slightly different complexion on the conversation that we've been having, because it is a timely reminder that some police officers run towards danger, run towards lethal threats, while the rest of us are minded to run away. Yesterday's Panorama, of course, featuring police officers who do not display the kind of courage and integrity that has perhaps been witnessed on the streets of Manchester earlier this morning. And we return to that conversation and the crucial distinction, I think, between racism, misogyny, sexism and institutionalisms, when it becomes an institutional issue, and the relevance or otherwise of Sir Mark Rowley, the Metropolitan Police Commissioner's refusal stroke reluctance to use that word. And, you know, speaking to Dan a moment ago and hearing, witnessing the raw emotion in his voice and in his contribution, and passing on an awful lot of love from an awful lot of listeners to you, Dan, it does feel like a slightly silly question in the current context. If you are worried about a rising tide of racism and hatred, then critiquing the Metropolitan Police Commissioner for saying systemic instead of institutional feels, or perhaps, like a semantic luxury to be arguing. I don't know. I just a thought that popped into my head. 10:50 is the time. 03456060973 is the number you need to contribute to this conversation. Helen's going to stay with me in the studio so that we can bring any developments from this incident in Manchester to you immediately. But by a sort of quirk of coincidence, the Mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, was in a radio studio as this story developed and broke, and I thought it might be helpful for us to have a listen to that as it unfolded live on presumably BBC Radio Manchester.
Should we get them?
That's why I'm delayed into the studio, Mike. So obviously I've answered the first question there, but I did want to say at the start of the show that is the reason why I'm delayed. It is a serious incident, I have to say. It is in the area that you mentioned, and I would say to people listening, firstly, to avoid the area, because it is a serious incident. But at the same time, I can give some reassurance immediately to people, that the immediate danger appears to be over, and Greater Manchester Police have dealt with it very quickly, and has been amazing support from, I think, members of the public and security at the location. But what I will do, Mike, is give more factual information as the hot seat develops, if that's okay. But I can obviously give people that immediate reassurance not to worry too much. The situation has been dealt with very effectively by those on site and by Greater Manchester Police.
10:52 is the time. Andy Burnham there, the Mayor of Greater Manchester, live on the radio, sort of half an hour or so ago, revealing details, sharing details of this incident in Manchester, where a suspect has been shot by police after injuring four members of the public attending a synagogue at the Heaton Park Hebrew Congregation Synagogue shortly after 9:30 this morning. 6 minutes after the original call was made, the suspect was shot by Greater Manchester Police firearms officers, one man shot, believed to be the offender. As I say, Helen will bring us any more developments on that story as and when they develop. Back to the question of the difference, if you like, between having a colleague who engages in hateful conduct and working for an organisation that has an institutional issue with hateful conduct, opinions, behaviours. Martin is in Ferrum. Martin, what would you like to say?
Oh, hello, James. I thought I'd have a go at answering your question.
Go on, then.
If
if the response, if you got a routine response from whoever, the people that you meet at the desk or in your office or whatever, if the routine response that you get is misogynistic or racist or homophobic, then I will call that institutional racism. It may not be official. It probably is unofficial. But if that's what you get when you show up as someone who's gay or a woman or brown or black, then I would say that is institutional racism.
Well, is it about how your colleagues respond? So you know that not everybody in that room, when these behaviours unfolded, would have been comfortable with them. I would argue, and people may not like me for saying this, I would probably argue that the majority of people were uncomfortable with it. I mean, some of the other footage shows the female officer who'd, for example, arrested the alleged rapist who was then released on bail, talking about how much she hated the behaviour of the custody sergeant who'd cast doubt upon the testimony of the alleged victim. But for me, institutional means that even if they're a minority, they hold the floor, Martin. They kind of have the microphone.
Right.
In a way, and either the people that find it disgusting or the people who disapprove of it don't feel empowered enough to speak up or speak out.
Right. So if they hold the floor, then that makes it routine.
Yeah.
You see, I mean, if all right, there probably are some people over there somewhere in the corner, and they're not happy with it. But if this is what you get, all
but
right,
that's a problem with the institution, isn't it? Not just with the individuals.
Well, if you're trying to say if it's institutional or not, I mean, it doesn't have to come from the top, does it? The majority who will always respond in that way, homophobic, etc., then I would call that institutional.
And staying silent, of course. Silence can be compliance. That to me is the mark of institutional, because everybody's worked with individuals who are pretty hideous, and yet it's the failure to respond to it that is an institutional responsibility, I think.
Yeah, and then you're going against the culture, aren't you?
Yeah, I guess you are, and that would be why Dan talks about not wanting to pursue a complaint, because of the ramifications that would follow, the consequences of that. I want to phrase this very responsibly. If you are in the Crumpsall area of Manchester, if you are in the vicinity of that synagogue, and you think you may be able to tell us a little more than we have managed to broadcast already, then you would be very welcome on the programme. The number you need, as always, is 03456060973. We'll catch up after the news with Andy Hughes, LBC's crime correspondent and host of the Crime Agents podcast, who has been covering incidents like this for more years than he would care to remember. So Andy will join us shortly. Helen Holdenut is in the studio with me now. Greater Manchester Police responding to stabbings at a synagogue, but the suspect believed to have been shot, 4 people injured, and I suppose the most obvious developments will be regarding their condition, Helen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Andy Burnham, the mayor of Greater Manchester, said on that BBC show that it is believed the suspect has died after being shot by police. He did, though, say that is not confirmed.
Right.
But as we know, 4 people have been injured in that stabbing. The details are that police were called to the Heaton Park Hebrew Congregation Synagogue in Crumpsall at 9:31 this morning by a member of the public, saying that he had seen a car being driven towards members of the public and saw that one man had been stabbed. Greater Manchester Police declared a major incident and shots were fired by armed police officers at 9:38, so just a few minutes after arriving at the scene. Paramedics attended at 9:41, and they've been tending to 4 members of the public with both stab wounds and injuries from the vehicle. And footage from outside the synagogue is starting to appear on social media. It shows a huge emergency response, and also some pretty alarming footage as well that hasn't been verified at this point, showing aspects of the aftermath, alleged aftermath of this incident in Manchester.
Helen Hoddenott, thank you. And as I've reiterated repeatedly, we will be bringing you more detail on that as and when we can. I have also asked, and it's important that we conduct ourselves very responsibly in this sort of space, for you to contact me if you are in the area, or if you have any proximity to the unfolding events. And Anthony has done precisely that. Anthony, what can you tell us?
I'm just on the scene here now, to be honest. I heard gunshots. I was just sort of working in a house, and I heard the gunshots out of the window. So I just come out to investigate. I've witnessed the air ambulances turn up.
How many?
I've just got I saw two air ambulances pulled up on a field across from where I am. And there's, I don't know, maybe 8-9 ambulances, fire engines, armed police. Just everything is just a massive, like, sort of terror incident response kind of thing.
How close to the synagogue are you?
I can't see the synagogue, but I think I'm pretty close. There's a set of shops just before it, and I'm just on the other side of them. I can see all the... I'm like right next to where the takes-off area is.
Gosh. Yeah. How many gunshots did you hear?
I heard six. I'm sure it was six. There was three in quick succession, 1, 2, 3, and then a load of shouting. When I realised something was going on, and then I heard another one, and then it sounded, I'm sure there was another one. So maybe five or six, I think.
And how, just tell me what you can see from where you are. I mean, are people gathering now behind the police cordons?
No, what I've got in front of me is two fire engines and about 20 firemen, like sort of Greater Manchester Fire and Rescue guys. Look like they're all being debriefed, to be honest. It looks like it's... coming to an end, maybe, I don't know, but like, yeah, all in like the stab vests and stuff. But that's just what's right in front of me. I can see a street ahead of me that's been taped off. There's a load of policemen there just talking to members of the public. I just heard there's a guy next to me doing some kind of debrief there, and I just caught a little bit of what he said. He said the guy's still alive. He said they've still got him on the scene. I heard him say there's 40 members of the congregation in the synagogue hold up.
Of course.
Being like sort of kept safe and stuff, but then he noticed that I was listening and walked off.
Thank you for that. I presume you're a bit shaken. It's not a normal occurrence on a Thursday morning in anywhere.
No, not at all. I was just about to leave, and I'm sort of stuck here now behind a big police cordon. Quite scary and exciting. Same time, if you like, you know, not what I was expecting to be dealing with this morning at all.
No, well, I'm grateful to you for your time and your attention, Anthony. Take care and do stay safe. 1 minute after 11. Anthony in Crumpsall there, talking to us from the scene of the synagogue where it is being reported four members of the public have been injured after a car drove into the crowd outside the synagogue, and some of those injuries also a consequence of stabbings, but the suspect has been shot, as you just heard. 1 minute after 11 is the time.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC,
leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
Car and stabbing attack at a synagogue in Greater Manchester. Officers say four people are being treated by ambulance crews at the Heaton Park Hebrew Congregation Synagogue in Crumpsall. Jewish communities are marking Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the year in Judaism. LBC's reporter Helen Hoddenott says the incident unfolded just after 9:30 this morning.
Greater Manchester Police say they're at the scene of this stabbing at a synagogue on Middleton Road in Crumpsall. Andy Burnham, the mayor of Greater Manchester, has just given an update and said four people have been injured in that attack. The police have just confirmed to me that the suspect did not gain access to the building and that he was shot at the scene by armed police.
The mayor, Andy Burnham, says it is believed the suspect is dead and the immediate danger is over. People have been told to avoid the Crumsall area and do stay with LBC for the latest developments as they come in. In other news this morning, the Metropolitan Police Commissioner has again declined to say the force is institutionally racist.
Frankly, the words I use aren't that important. Different commissioners have used different words. Some have used the institutional racism phrase, some haven't. That's not what's going to change things. It's the action, it's the hard, sharp action we're taking that is making progress. But as I say, I'm not any illusion there's more to do.
Okay, you're not going to say you're institutionally racist, homophobic,
no.
Misogynist. You're not prepared to say that?
No.
Sir Mark Rowley was speaking to LBC after secret filming at Charing Cross Police Station in London. The commissioner says the footage shows incontrovertible evidence of racism, misogyny and officers relishing in using excess force. He's apologised and says those involved could be sacked within weeks. And European leaders are meeting in Denmark to discuss the war in Ukraine and efforts to tackle illegal migration. The government's unveiled a series of changes to the UK's asylum system. They include a tougher route to long-term settlement and ending refugees' automatic right to bringing their families to Britain. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 94.55. That's up 9. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 14. LBC weather, cloudy with rain for many areas, but drier in the southeast of England. A high of 20 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission. And it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 5 minutes after 11 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where you will understand we have gone into rolling news mode as the situation in Manchester, where if you are just joining us, four people have been injured in an attack outside the synagogue. Police say the suspect has been shot by officers, and the eyewitness, Anthony, we spoke to a moment ago, described two air ambulances arriving at the scene. If you are in that vicinity, if you are in that area and you are minded to share with us your perspective, what you can see, what you can tell us, then I would be honoured to talk to you. 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. Andy Hughes, LBC's crime correspondent, is with me now. Before we get on to what the police will be doing in this moment, what has anything changed since the last news bulletin?
Well, at the moment, Greater Manchester Police is still leading this investigation. Counter-terrorism policing is not leading it, which means that this is not officially a terror attack. Now, that may change, of course. What will be happening is that the North West Counter-Terrorism Unit, they will be liaising with Greater Manchester Police, and it is not, as I say, at this stage, an official terror attack.
Would you have expected it to be? Would you have expected counter-terrorism police to be in the lead by now, or perhaps that's a silly question?
Well, every case is different, of course. The fact that it hasn't... The fact that counter-terrorism policing aren't leading this suggests that there might be more to this, and that suggests that it is not as straightforward as people may think.
And, of course, there is nothing we can do to stop people thinking all manner of things or indeed saying them. I won't be broadcasting any sort of speculation or irresponsible speculation or theorising on the programme. What will be the situation on the ground? We spoke to Anthony. He painted quite a graphic picture, actually, of air ambulances flying into adjacent fields, fire engines turning up, police officers armed and masked patrolling the area. What will be their priorities at this point?
Well, the GMP have declared a Plato major incident. That basically is code word for respond as if it is a marauding terror attack. So it is all resources will be being poured into this, and the obviously the first priority is to look after the victims. They are being looked after by the ambulance services and the paramedics, and then it will be then they will be looking straight away. Is this a one-off offence? Is this a one-off attack, or is this part of a wider plot? That's exactly what they'll be looking into right now.
And the people in the synagogue, the people in the congregation, as far as we're aware, the attacker didn't breach the building. That they'll be receiving care and concern. It's a strange scenario, Andy, because if the suspect has been shot, as is being reported, and if he was or she was a lone operator, then the threat level feels high, but it may actually already be over.
Yes, exactly that. But that is exactly the priority for the police at the moment. Is there more to come? They will be trying to find out who this man is. Where's he from? They will be gathering intelligence right now to find out if he is a lone wolf or if he is part of a wider plot.
And if CTU were to assume leadership on this, when might that happen? When might we expect counter-terrorism officers to assume the lead on an investigation like this or an operation like this?
It usually happens within the first hour or two that it will be passed to counter-terrorism police.
And that would be announced. We'd find that out fairly quick.
Yes, it would. I mean, I'm constantly checking my phone right now because I'm kind of waiting for an update. I text a source just before I came on air, and they told me that it is still with Greater Manchester Police at the moment, and counter-terrorism policing are not leading this at the moment.
10 minutes after 11 is the time. 4 people injured in an attack on a synagogue in Manchester shortly after, well, the call was made by a member of the public at 9:30 this morning. Would you expect that response to be so swift? I'm not anywhere near as au fait with operational matters as you are, but and I don't want to use words like impressed, but that's a pretty stark statistic. The call was made at 9:31. Shots were fired at 9:38.
Yeah, well, this is Greater Manchester Police, one of the biggest police forces in the country. If this had happened in a less major city or a less built-up area, then the response would have been a lot longer, I imagine. But yes, the fact that this has happened in a heavily built-up area of Manchester, then that's why the response was so quick. Anything like this, it immediately, when it gets escalated to Plato, it is just every single resource responds. And it's all these different agencies. You'll have Greater Manchester Police. You'll have the neighbourhood police right there trying to control the scene. That in itself is a big challenge. And then you will have specialist counter-terrorism officers from the North West Counter-Terrorism Unit. They will be on scene now trying to assess whether this has crossed the threshold into terrorism.
And how open would the dialogue be with journalists like you? I mean, you mentioned sources, so there'll be official channels, of course, but also unofficial channels where you might get a steer on what is going on and what is happening. That presumably is going to develop in the coming minutes and hours.
Well, yes, that's what my job is, of course. It's my job to find out if, ahead of everyone else, if this is indeed a terror attack or not. But as I say, at the moment, it is still being led by Greater Manchester Police, which suggests that at this moment, it is unknown whether this is way more serious than people may think.
Aye. 12 minutes after 11 is the time. It's always a little bit difficult to know what to say. People often mock the phrase thoughts and prayers, but I'm afraid that that's all that we have sometimes at moments like this. Happily, at the moment, it would appear that the only person dead is the suspect, 4 injuries about which we will discover more in the coming days. It is, of course, rendered all the more horrific by the fact that it has taken place on Yom Kippur, the holiest day in the Jewish calendar, which would explain also why the congregation was assembled outside the synagogue. Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, who is himself, of course, married to a Jewish lady, has issued a statement. "I'm appalled," he says, "by the attack at a synagogue in Crumpsall. The fact that this has taken place on Yom Kippur, The holiest day in the Jewish calendar makes it all the more horrific. My thoughts are with the loved ones of all those affected, and my thanks go to the emergency services and all the first responders. And the detail will emerge. It is a frustration and a very modern phenomenon in moments like this, that the space, particularly the online space, will fill with all manner of information. We saw it after those dreadful murders in Southport last year, when people were disseminating and amplifying blatant lies, in some cases for political ends, it's been suggested. But there's no room for that on responsible media platforms like this one. I will just remind you of what Anthony had to say to us a few moments ago, live from the scene, in fact, and drawn to the area, the vicinity of the synagogue by gunshots.
It's six. I'm sure it was six. There was three in quick succession, one, two, three, and then a load of shouting. That's when I realised something was going on, and then I heard another one, and then another one, and then it sounded, I'm sure there was another one. So maybe five or six, I think.
And just tell me what you can see from where you are. I mean, are people gathering now behind the police cordons?
No, what I've got in front of me is two fire engines and about 20 firemen, like sort of Greater Manchester Fire and Rescue guys. Look like they're all being debriefed, to be honest. It looks like it's coming to an end, maybe. I don't know, but all in like the stab vests and stuff. But that's just what's right in front of me. I can see a street ahead of me that's been taped off. There's a load of policemen there just talking to members of the public. I just heard there's a guy next to me doing some kind of debrief there, and I just caught a little bit of what he said. He said the guy, I think the guy's still alive. He said they've still got him on the scene. I heard him say that there's 40 members of the congregation in the synagogue holed up.
Of course.
Being like sort of kept safe and stuff, but then he noticed that I was listening and walked off.
Thank you for that. I presume you're a bit shaken. It's not a normal occurrence on a Thursday morning in anywhere.
No, not at all. I was just about to leave, and I'm sort of stuck here now behind a big police cordon. Quite scary and exciting at the same time, if you like. Not what I was expecting to be dealing with this morning at all.
No, well, I'm grateful to you for your time and your attention, Anthony. Take care and do stay safe. 11:15 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC.
This is LBC. Across the UK, people like Phil face their toughest challenges alone.
It's a pain that I feel like the body can't comprehend losing a child, because you are not supposed to outlive your children.
LBC's charity, Make Some Noise, is here to support people like Phil.
It's kind of a family that you never wanted to be a part of, and you would never choose to be a part of it. But now you're in it, you don't know what you'd do without.
You can change lives. Donate now at makesomenoise.com. Proudly supported by Furniture Village.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging, or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters. On your doorstep. Based on 2024 UK and EU Amazon packaging data.
Play Set for Life from the National Lottery. Winners get 10k every month for 30 years. You could win on repeat. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
17 minutes after 11, you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Andy Hughes, LBC's crime correspondent and host, of course, of the Crime Agents podcast, is with me in the studio, poised to bring any developments in this unfolding and possibly, and obviously we're live on the radio, and the necessity of me choosing my words very carefully is never more acute than at times like this. But as I say, unfolding, it is possibly an unfolded situation. And all that remains to be reported will be further information and detail. Happily, and again, I use that word advisedly, the suspect appears to have been shot. Well, he has been shot. It's been reported he's been shot. His fate is currently not known. Social media inevitably will be full, as a couple of you are telling me, will be full of all manner of speculations and even fake footage. Sadly, that's the age in which we live. But you will be, by listening to this radio station and this radio program, and myself and my colleagues and maybe some more callers, you will be in receipt of all of the confirmed information, all of the established facts at the moment that they are available. 18 minutes after 11 is the time. And once again, if you are in the area, or you are perhaps linked to the synagogue, or you simply feel you have a perspective that is not being reflected at this moment on your radio, then do call me on 0345 60 60 973. I think it's fair to say that the security outside synagogues, with which many of us will be familiar, will never have felt more necessary or more valuable than it does at a moment like this. The Community Security Trust has released a statement saying that they are working with police and the local Jewish community following a serious incident at a synagogue in North Manchester. This appears to be an appalling attack on the holiest day of the Jewish year. We thank the GMP officers and synagogue security who responded immediately to deal with the incident. And they suggest that you could follow Greater Manchester Police and their own social media for further statements. It is 19 minutes after 11. Bradley is in Manchester. Bradley, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, good morning, James.
Hello, mate.
I think it's shocking because Manchester, you went to uni here, so you know roughly the geography of Crumpsall and Cheetham Hill. So we live in Watford, and I'm a lapsed Jew. I don't go anywhere near, but I do go on Yom Kippur. Right. And my father had just left for shul, and we get a phone call saying that this attack had happened literally a couple of seconds before he went. Now, we do have relatives that...
Was he heading to that synagogue, or was he going to...
So he was going to Whitefield, but we do have relatives that were heading towards... Because Yom Kippur is a day, you know, you can kind of drift in and out. It's an
all
day.
Can you tell us a bit about that for non-Jewish people or people not familiar with your faith listening? You made it to me as a Catholic. It sounds a bit like Christmas. You're going to go at Christmas, but not for the rest of the year. You're going to go at Yom Kippur, but not for the rest of the year. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, that's absolutely a fair comment. I mean, even some Yom Kippurs I don't go, depending on work. But yeah, I mean, invariably, that's the day that if you were going to go, and for me, it's a little bit... Well, I'll go for mum and dad because
you know, I get
it's just a nice thing to do. So yeah, it's similar to going on Christmas Eve. So yeah, we would head out for that day. And as I said, you would go at any point. You don't have to go. There's not a set start, a set finish. You would wander in for a couple of hours, speak to a few people, and off you go. So you know, people will drift in and out during that day, I suppose.
So have you been? I mean, you're probably. Got people who'd be attending shul at that synagogue then, given your geography.
I mean, my mum and dad were married there.
Gosh.
And I went to school in King David, which is, you know, a couple hundred yards away. And, you know, if you look at that school now and you look at the amazing work that CST did, that school at King David, which is just literally around the corner, looks like an open prison. You've got massive iron gates that run all the way through it. You've got constant 24-hour security. It's deeply worrying. And anti-Semitism, unfortunately, is one of the only types of hatred which spans both the far left and the far right. So we
that's
are in a unique position to say, well, you know, that's why you can't speculate where this comes from. But we are in a really unique situation. And, you know, obviously with the situation in Gaza and, you know, I'm no fan of Netanyahu, but it's such a tricky time.
It is a tricky time, and I'm going to be understandably cautious about anybody going down the sort of broader geopolitical path at the moment, although I completely, I'm not by any stretch of the imagination, admonishing you, and just reminding everybody listening that the facts are by far the most important element of this unfolding conversation. But there's a couple of other things you could help me with, if you don't mind. Would people take their phones with them, for example, to shul?
It's an interesting one, because when I was growing up, no, you couldn't carry anything. Now, there is this really odd thing that they do now in certain synagogues where they run this kind of wire around a certain... They do it in Leicester Road and the really slum parts of Salford, where they run this kind of wire. They do it in Whiteford, actually. They run this wire, I don't know what it's called. I'm sure somebody far more understanding will know it. They run this wire around a certain area, which allows you, I don't know how it works, to carry items into the synagogue. So I would imagine nowadays in 2025,
right,
there's certain synagogues that have this. Yes, you would be allowed to carry your phone in, but when I was growing up, no, not in the 80s or 90s, you weren't allowed to carry anything. But now,
well, it may depend on the individual. Then a traditionalist would probably not want to take. So there will be families, of course, worried about their loved ones for injuries that we know about, and there may be some difficulty for family members to actually confirm whether or not their loved ones, their relatives, have been caught up in this violence.
It's amazing that was at mum and dad's house, and they had a house phone, and it's still. I mean, I'm 48 now, and I don't have a landline, but the amount of phone calls that were coming into my mum on that phone from lots of people that live close, that live in, you know, that's the one thing about being in the Jewish community of Whiteford, it's so close-knit that she must have had 15, 20 calls this morning within the space of half an hour from people all over Whitefield, all over Prestwich, all over Manchester, telling her what's happening.
Because so, they know it's on your doorstep. Just to be clear, Brad, your dad's okay.
Dad's okay. He was, I mean, Whitefield, again, they've got full-time CST. They do an incredible job, by the way, those guys that stand there. And I think the training now that they do, and I know a couple of people used to do it, has obviously come to fruition, because the worst possible case scenario has happened today for those guys. And so, thank God for...
They're there in case they're needed, and today they clearly were. Again, we'll no doubt find more. I'm hearing it might be called an Erev. Does that ring any bells?
That's the one. There's always more... Somebody more intelligent to tell
you. Well, it's not a question of being intelligent. You've been incredibly helpful, Bradley, at such a sensitive time. Thank you for that, and do take care. 25 minutes after 11. If you are in the area and have a contribution to make, and remember, Bradley, who I think you'd agree was very, very helpful, is not an actual eyewitness to the events. Our first caller, Anthony, went into that category, but you will have learnt from Bradley that you yourself may be able to bring something of use to us, to the conversation, and if so, if you think so, then do get in touch in all the usual ways, especially though if, of course, you have eyewitness accounts, if you have been on the ground or you are in the area at the moment. 0345 60 60 973. Andy Hughes, LBC's crime correspondent, is still with me.
Yes, so a bomb disposal unit has just arrived on the scene, and I have also received a unverified picture of a man wearing a vest with white pouches coming from underneath that. The suggestion is that this may be the attacker, and that would chime with the information I'm getting that the bomb disposal unit has been deployed and is now at the scene. This, although the name is bomb disposal, they will be looking for all types of potential weapons. And the priority is to make the scene very safe for the paramedics to be able to treat the four victims.
The Prime Minister, currently in Denmark, I think, on a trip, will no doubt be making his way back to the United Kingdom. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, joins me on the line now. What do we know about the Prime Minister's movements, Natasha?
Yeah, good morning, James. Well, as you just said, he's flying back now from Copenhagen after that attack in Manchester. He was due to host meetings this morning and this afternoon at the European Political Community Summit, which is basically just a gathering of European leaders set up in the wake of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. But he was meant to be talking about immigration. Now, the Prime Minister, as we've been saying this morning, has put a message out on social media. He says he's appalled by the attack, said the fact that it has taken place on Yonkers Kippur, which is the holiest day of the Jewish calendar, makes it all the more horrific. He says, my thoughts are with loved ones affected, and thanks go to the emergency services and all the first responders. We've also got a statement here in just the last few minutes from Shabana Mahmood, the Home Secretary. She's also said she's horrified by today's news. Her thoughts with the victims. She says she is being kept up to date by Greater Manchester Police and urges people to follow the advice of the emergency services. So yes, just to say that the Prime Minister doesn't usually fly back early from any political summit in case it, unless it is such a serious situation, and he'll be chairing a COBRA meeting later today, I am told, on this situation. So clearly taken very, very seriously by the highest levels of government, and the Prime Minister flying back from that European Community Summit, deciding that this incident, and like I say, the details on it, of course, still emerging, still very scant, but he believes that it's the best for him to be in the country chairing the response to that.
Natasha, thank you. LBC's political editor there reporting that the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, is returning early from a scheduled trip to Copenhagen in order to chair an emergency meeting regarding this incident in Manchester earlier this morning. Four people injured. Andy Hughes is still with me. Just in terms of timescales, in terms of what needs to be done, if there is a... And Andy Burnham has said he believes that the suspect has been shot dead. But of course, if he's wearing this vest, as we suspect, again, it's your the quality of your sources that we're relying on here, rather than undue speculation. If he is wearing a vest, then that will need to be dealt with by the bomb squad. When roughly, if you can even begin to answer this question, may they start sort of restoring the scene to normality?
I mean, this is an active crime scene, so, and at every crime scene, especially one like this, there will be so much evidence to gather. What will be happening right behind the scenes now is there's this Central Counterterrorism Command. I won't say where the location is for obvious reasons, but this is where MI5 sit, MI6, GCHQ, which is the spying arm of the government, and counter-terrorism policing. They will all be working together now to find out who this man is, and crucially, was he on their radar? If he was, then that is a intelligence failure. If it isn't, then they will be scrambling around trying to find out who he is, who the accomplices, what properties is he linked to, and gathering as much data as they can. If I'm assuming if they find an address, they will be putting that door in very, very soon.
It is believed that the offender is deceased, says Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham, but this is not confirmed. And it would appear from all of the available information so far, Andy Hughes, that it is a lone operator, a single suspect.
Well, that's the information we have at the moment, but that simply won't be confirmed or known at this moment. It is just too early for even the security services to know this. They will only know that once they have done some serious digging into who this suspect is.
Thank you, Andy. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. The time is 11:30, and Thomas Watts has your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer says he is appalled by a car and stabbing attack at a synagogue in Greater Manchester. At least four people have been injured and are being treated at the scene in Crumpsall. A suspect was shot by police shortly after 9:30 this morning. The Prime Minister has described it as all the more horrific because it's Yom Kippur, the holiest day in the Jewish calendar. Sir Keir has confirmed he will be returning from a meeting of European leaders in Denmark, and he's expected to lead a COBRA meeting later. Stay with LBC for the latest. LBC weather, cloudy with rain for many, but drier in the southeast. A high of 20 degrees.
LBC.
Arenas full of fans. Stars taking it to another level. The excitement, the glory, the action. And you could be behind it all. Kickstart your career in esports with Global Academy's new esports production sixth form course. Get the skills and knowledge to join a fast-growing media industry. And you could even join Global Academy's own esports team. Thinking what next after GCSEs? Then find out more about the esports production sixth form course at globalacademy.com.
I've been asked by Shredded Wheat to read out their ingredients list. Drum roll. Whole grain wheat. No, that's it. A single ingredient, high fiber cereal. Shredded Wheat. It simply does it. I'm telling menu, that's it. Applies to shredded wheat bite size and big biscuit only.
The Monopoly game at McDonald's is back. There's over £2 million worth of cash prizes to be won. And a chance to get your hands on some epic prizes. Go on, it's your go. 18 plus, UK, ends 21st of October. Selected menu items. App may be required. May depend on winning moment. See mcdrules.co.uk.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
It's right up here in the London Eye.
But imagine being inside. Perfect panoramic views of the capital from iconic pods.
Then get two Sun Super Day stickers to the London Eye. 34,000 available from £19 and thousands on the Sun for free.
Pick up the paper this Saturday to start collecting. Only in the Sun.
T's and C's apply. Even for seagulls.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC with James O'Brien. Text 84850.
33 minutes after 11 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we are reporting exclusively for the foreseeable future on this incident in Manchester earlier today, where four people were injured by either stabbing or vehicle outside a synagogue in the Crumpsall area. It is, as all Jewish people will know, Yom Kippur, which is the holiest day in the Jewish calendar, and explains why there would have been a lot of people in both the synagogue and the immediate vicinity. Our caller Bradley explaining some of the detail of the significance of this day, and he lived very near to the synagogue. People would be observing shul for the duration. So it's not like a religious service where you go for the hour and then leave. It is a sort of day of contemplation and congregation. So the synagogue would be a focus of the community for the entire day. I'm going to talk next to Chris Phillips, who's a former head of the National Counterterrorism Security Office. That's a police-hosted unit that supports the protect and prepare strands of the government's counterterrorism strategy. It's always a bit of a tightrope at moments like this, Chris, between responsible speculation, if you like, and irresponsible speculation. But if this were to be an event that falls under the purview of counter-terrorist officers, when might we realistically expect that to be confirmed?
Well, I think, James, that it probably already has done, in that they called Operation Plato, which is effectively the marauding terrorist attack methodology and what the police should do in response to that. So I think we're pretty much already there.
And what will be the priorities of the people on the ground as we speak? It occurred to me during the last news bulletin that the reason why Andy Burnham can't confirm whether the suspect is alive or dead will be because the bomb squad has to establish what he has, we believe, got strapped to him. Before anyone else can approach, before any medics can approach.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the first point, really, is to make people safe. If it is indeed a bomb that's strapped to him, then people are still very much in danger, because those things are lethal, as we know. And the police, really, it's the police emergency services is about making sure that people stay alive, that are still alive, and treating those poor victims. But we also have to bear in mind that, once again, this is a religious site that's been attacked on a holy day, not the first, and it won't be the last. And the people of Manchester, of course, are also very used to having to deal with terrorism.
Do we know, would it be possible to establish roughly when the condition of the injured might be? More might be known about the condition of the injured. When realistically, if they've been taken to hospitals, then that information should be available sooner rather than later.
Yeah, very much. Clearly the victims of this will be taken to hospital as soon as possible, and we should know very quickly about that. Clearly, you know, the video that I've seen, there are some people very seriously injured and may well not make it. So it is a case of keeping people informed, but also we have to bear in mind that there's families and things that need to be informed.
And if I may, and I choose my words quite carefully, the speed between the shortness of time between the original call from a member of the public at 9:31 and the reported gunshots at 9:38, is that pretty much what you would expect in a situation like this? Geography is going to be relevant, isn't it? The proximity of officers to the synagogue itself is going to play a part in that. But it's hard to imagine that the response could have been any quicker, Chris.
I think that's an incredible response to get firearms officers, bearing in mind that the vast majority of police officers in the UK are not armed, whether or not they already had firearms officers nearby simply because of the day, Yom Kippur, etc. But it is a brilliant response and as much as we can expect from our police.
Chris Phillips, many thanks indeed. Chris, a former head, as I said, of the National Counter-Terrorism Security Office. I think I described the significance of Yom Kippur correctly, but if you could go a little further to think of it as an entire day to reflect and ask God's forgiveness. And as Bradley explained to us earlier, also to sort of commune with your community. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Andy Hughes, LBC's crime editor, is still with me and will be probably for the duration of the program today. When would we in situations like this expect to get bulletins from, for example, the hospitals or the health services?
Well, the first thing that needs to happen is the families of the victims need to be informed.
Right.
And that takes some time to bottom out, and also the hospital needs to treat the most serious injuries first. If the worst happens, the family are informed, a statement is then prepared. So there's lots of processes that need to happen before any announcement is made, which is why it usually takes at least a few hours before we hear any details about the status of the victims.
We have journalists on their way to the scene. Some news organisations have already got cameras on the ground, but they are really just reflecting pictures that are Anthony relayed to us in words half an hour ago. This is fire engines, ambulances, police cars, as you'd expect. CST Security, that's the Community Security Trust, who provide security to pretty much every synagogue in the country because of various threats that were in place long before the October the 7th terror attacks by Hamas drew way more attention to these issues than had been present previously. The threat to synagogues and to Jewish people in this country has been ever present. Have we got something new?
Yeah, so there is now a video that is on social media which appears to be the incident itself. This is not verified yet, but
Chris Phillips referred to it, and he's the former head of National Terrorism Security. Yeah. I think we probably can.
Yeah, okay. In this video, an onlooker can be heard saying that the suspect has got a bomb in him. This man is on the floor with what appears to be a suicide vest. It has white pouches. The man is wriggling about on the floor, and then you could hear a police officer say, or someone say, he is going to blow himself up. He's trying to press the button. And it is at that point that gunshots could be heard. And then that person falls to the ground.
Gosh. That's hideous imagery that that you conjure up. I don't think this is an inappropriate question, because the detail that you've just furnished probably answers it, at least in part. But often in situations like this, people will wear vests that are not actually real explosives. They're designed themselves to terrorize.
Yes, exactly. The majority of suicide vests are actually fake.
Really? The majority?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
The majority, because an actual suicide vest is very complicated and complex to make. And usually the person who is wearing this, the intention is not to blow anything up, but the intention is to be shot and killed themselves.
Because it completely changes the complexion of the policing challenge, doesn't it, if that person is believed to be, as you say, potentially explosive.
Correct. It is a known tactic by terrorists that they will adopt, to wear a fake suicide vest, because they don't want to make it out of there alive.
10:42, very nearly, is the time. And again, we will no doubt between now and 1 o'clock find out more about the unfolding situation. You used the phrase, a very evocative phrase a moment ago, Andy. You said they'll be putting that door in, meaning that the police now, the ones not on the scene, will be working furiously to identify as much detail as they possibly can about the suspect, a process that again goes into overdrive at the moment the death or the safety of approaching the suspect is confirmed. Once they find out what's on him, find out possibly who he is, where he's come from. Tell us a little bit about that operation. You've probably attended similar, where people actually arrive on the scene and anything could be in that building. I'm reminded actually of the Manchester Arena bombings the immediate aftermath of that atrocity.
Yeah, so what happens is the first object of the police is to neutralize, as they say, the suspect. Once that is done, if the suspect is wearing what could be a suicide vest or have explosives on them, they are then left alone. They are not allowed to be approached until the bomb disposal squad comes in. We've just seen that about 10-15 minutes ago. They will then assess, is there an actual bomb? If it is, they will then defuse it. After that, the counter-terrorism specialist officers will then go in and try and identify this man, see if they just know him by face. Pictures will be sent to the counter-terror command. Do we know who this is? Is this known? And if he has any identification on him, and then they will run it through the system. Crucially, is he on their radar? And that is the first thing. Usually they are. And if he isn't, then it is known as a huge intelligence failure, and they're playing catch up big time, because if they have no information about the suspect, then where do they start? But usually most people who commit these offences are on the...
It's a lose-lose situation, isn't it? Because if he is on their radar and they fail to prevent it from happening, there will be very difficult questions to be answered. And if he isn't on their radar and they had no idea that this was gestating, then there will be very difficult questions to answer.
Absolutely, absolutely. What monitoring has been in place for this man?
I'm grateful to Mosh for a little bit of further information upon the nature of Yom Kippur. He tells me it's a religious service. It's prayers all day in the synagogue, James. People just choose which prayers they want to attend depending on how observant or traditional they are. We also fast for 25 hours, and in the Orthodox world are not allowed to use our phones. It's not about carrying the phone. It can't be used if you're Orthodox, in the same way that it can't be used on Shabbat. It's coming up to 11:45. We have a reporter at the scene. Will we talk to him now, or will we talk to him in a moment, I think? We'll get Liam Gotting on the other end of the line at the scene of this incident in Manchester earlier this morning, and we'll hear from him after this.
This is LBC.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're cruising through Europe's iconic cities along the Danube or enjoying a rainforest tour through Costa Rica. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply. Over 50s only.
The Monopoly game at McDonald's is back. And with a 1-in-4 chance to win instantly on pack, you could get your hands on a £2,000 Jet 2 holiday, a Big Mac, Merlin annual passes for four, and even more epic prizes. Go on. It's your go. 18 plus. UK. Ends 21st of October. Selected menu items. Subject to availability. App may be required. See mcdrules.co.uk.
It's right up here in the London Eye.
But imagine being inside. Perfect panoramic views of the capital from iconic pods.
Then get two Sun Super Day stickers to the London Eye. 34,000 available from £19 and thousands on the Sun for free.
Pick up the paper this Saturday to start collecting. Only in the Sun.
T's and C's apply. Even for seagulls.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance. Stayshore is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more five-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So Stayshore with Stayshore Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of five-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at stayshore.co.uk/reviews.
private healthcare. Sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per person per month.
Just for GP calls.
For a 24/7 GP helpline, physio, diagnostics and more. Now, tell me.
All about my medical history.
No, no medical questionnaires or hidden charges. We like to call it
healthcare done different.
Spot on. Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. 6-month wait for some services. T&Cs apply. Selected surgical procedures after 6 months. 24 in Northern Ireland. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
I've been asked by Shredded Wheat to read out their ingredients list. Drum roll. Whole grain wheat. No, that's it. A single ingredient, high fibre cereal. Shredded Wheat. It simply does it. I'm telling you, that's it. Applies to Shredded Wheat, Bite Size and Big Biscuit only.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 11:47. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Our reporter Liam Gotting is on the ground at the scene of this incident in Manchester, which everybody is hoping is complete in the context of actual criminal activity, but where an awful lot of investigation and indeed discovery remains. Liam, what can you see and what have you learned since you arrived?
Hi, James. To be honest, it's really difficult to hear you because it is so chaotic down here. I'm sure you can hear the police helicopter that's flying quite low, very low over our heads at the minute. As I was listening to you, then police are continuing to push us and the rest of the crowd here further and further away from the police cordon. We're around about maybe 100 yards further back than where we were about 2 minutes ago, but it is just a sea of blue lights here everywhere we look. Around about 2 or 3 minutes ago, 3 or 4 tactical aid unit police vans arrived here on site. Many armed officers are getting out of those vans and heading into the police cordon. As I look down at the road now, all I can see is various police cars, police vans, there are fire crew and ambulances here on site as well. Police are now just taping up a new cordon here in front of us. As I say, they've moved us all back around about 100 yards or so. There's a crowd of about 100, 200 people here maybe at the minute, all with their phones, all talking to each other, all trying to get a glimpse like we are as well, trying to figure out exactly what has happened here. But there are so many police, too many to count here on site, James. Armed officers, non-armed officers, non-uniformed officers as well. But as I say, we've moved around about 100 yards further back now. A police helicopter, I'm sure you can hear, is flying very, very low above us, and it just keeps circling round and round the area. But many people here look devastated here, James. They look confused, they look shocked. Of course, on the day of Yom Kippur, the holiest day in the Jewish calendar, there is so much shock, so many people I can see looking around me just in tears here at the cordon. A lot of confusion, a lot of anger, a lot of upset here at the cordon as police continue to move us back further. As the police helicopter above me seems to be getting lower and lower as I continue talking. But yes, James, it's an incredibly busy, chaotic scene here in Manchester as we're all trying to continue waiting for more and more answers to what exactly has happened here.
Of course, and we're grateful to you, Liam, for being there for us, albeit that you remind us chiefly that information is currently at something of a premium. Andy, some questions coming in from listeners that perhaps you might be able to help with. A couple of people wondering why police that they can see on their television screens are wearing masks. At an incident like this.
Those will be counter-terrorism specialist firearms officers. Those are officers who are deployed to scenes of potential terror attacks. And those officers, of course, do a lot of surveillance work.
Their identity secret, effectively.
Well, of course they have to, because a lot of what they do actually isn't what you're seeing now. A lot of what they do is actually tailing suspects and doing surveillance work, undercover work. So that's why they have to keep their identities unknown.
Presumably, I mean, you've explained to us what a Plato incident is. Mm. We still actually don't know that the counterterrorism officers have assumed leadership of this inquiry. But Plato is ordinarily associated with terrorism. It's a marauding actor, as it were. And therefore, presumably, there will now be enhanced security at other synagogues in the country.
Yes, exactly that. And I think the Prime Minister has just confirmed that recently. One of the first things the security services will want to do is make sure that this is a lone incident and that if there are any more planned attacks, that they are fully prepared. So armed resources have been deployed not only in Manchester, but all over the country to protect synagogues.
Can I ask you a silly question?
Go on.
The officers who will now be on red alert and now working absolutely tirelessly and furiously to establish who has done this, what has happened, and most importantly, perhaps now, at this point in proceedings, whether or not there is any association or likelihood of similar acts. Mm. What do they do the rest of the time?
Well, the rest of the time, they are constantly surveilling. They have stopped 13 terror attacks in the last year. And these are not only...
Sometimes we never hear of them.
Well, we never hear of them. These are what are called imminent attacks. So these attacks were just about to happen. Someone might be on their way to commit a terror attack, but they will never get there because these counterterrorism specialist firearms officers and specialist undercover officers, all they do basically is monitor threats. And there are hundreds, over 500 people who could potentially commit a terror attack in the UK that they have to keep a very close eye on. They will be monitoring their phones, they will be monitoring their computers, their internet use, they will be old-fashioned just following them in the streets, seeing who they're meeting up with. So this is constantly going on. This is, when something like this happens, it's then you see them in the public. You never see them otherwise. You never do.
They are in the shadows.
They are in the shadows.
Protecting us from precisely these sort of potential situations. Let's hear from the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, speaking from the runway in Copenhagen, whence he is departing early in order to chair a COBRA meeting in London a little later today. COBRA, it sounds very exciting, but it is, I discovered some time ago, it simply describes a room. It's Cabinet Office Briefing Room A, but it's where emergency meetings like the one he will chair shortly generally unfold. Here he is speaking a few moments ago.
The attack in Manchester this morning is absolutely shocking, and all of our thoughts are with those affected. I'm on my way back to London. When I arrive, I will chair an emergency COBRA meeting. I'm already able to say that additional police assets are being deployed to synagogues across the country, and we will do everything to keep our Jewish community safe. I've spoken to Mark Gardner of the CST and Andy Burnham, Mayor of Manchester, and I want to thank the emergency services for the speed of their response.
Keir Starmer there speaking a few moments ago, and the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, also confirming an increased police presence at synagogues across the country.
At this time of year when Jewish people across the world are commemorating Yom Kippur, it's incredibly worrying. We've seen this awful attack on a synagogue in Manchester. I've been in contact with the Mayor of Manchester, Andy Burnham, with the Home Secretary and with the police. The Met Police Service will be stepping up high visibility policing in and around synagogues in London. I know, as it is, Jewish people have been scared and feeling scared over the last few months, indeed since October the 7th, 2020 at 3. I also know many want to go to the synagogue and worship. I want to reassure them that in London they will be seeing additional police officers. People should be allowed to go about and practice their faith, knowing they're going to be safe. Unfortunately, too many Jewish Londoners, Jewish people across the country, Jewish people across the globe don't feel that way, and that's heartbreaking.
Sadiq Khan speaking a few moments ago about the broader response in security terms to events in Manchester earlier today, where if you are just joining us, an attack, four people injured by a vehicle or by stabbing at a synagogue in the Crumpsall area of Manchester earlier this morning. The suspect shot at the scene within 7 minutes of the call being made by a member of the public and currently believed but not confirmed to be dead. And the reason for that confusion, as Andy Hughes, our crime editor, has explained, is simply because the bomb squad have to neutralise or ensure that the body is safe for medics to then approach. Some of the footage that is being shared on social media perhaps adds to the confidence with which Andy Burnham spoke of the suspect being dead a little earlier. But I stress again, it has not been confirmed. Anthony called me earlier to describe his immediate response, literally in the moment, working on a house, to use his own words, and then hearing gunshots interrupt an otherwise entirely ordinary Thursday morning. If you are in the vicinity and feel minded to add to the assembly of information that we're currently undertaking, then do feel free to ring in on 03456060973. I also would like to talk to you if you're part of this community or part of this congregation at this particular synagogue. 03456060973 is a number you need. Let's have another little listen to Anthony's call to the program, and I think this is in response to me asking him how many gunshots he'd actually heard.
It's six. I'm sure it was six. There was three in quick succession, one, two, three, and then a lot of shouting. That's when I realised something was going on, and then I heard another one, and then another one, and then it sounded, I'm sure there was another one. So maybe five or six, I think.
And just tell me what you can see from where you are. I mean, are people gathering now behind the police cordons?
So, what I've got in front of me is two fire engines and about 20 firemen, like sort of Greater Manchester Fire and Rescue guys. Look like they're all being debriefed, to be honest. It looks like it's coming to an end, maybe. I don't know, but like, yeah, all in like the stab vests and stuff. But that's just what's right in front of me. I can see a street ahead of me that's been taped off. There's a load of policemen there just talking to members of the public. There's a guy next to me doing some kind of debrief there, and I just caught a little bit of what he said. He said the guy's still alive. He said they've still got him on the scene. I heard him say that there's 40 members of the congregation in the synagogue hold up.
Of course.
Being like sort of kept safe and stuff, but then he noticed that I was listening and walked off.
Thank you for that. I presume you're a bit shaken. It's not a normal occurrence on a Thursday morning in anywhere.
No, not at all. I was just about to leave, and I'm sort of stuck here now behind a big police cordon. Quite scary and exciting at the same time, if you like. Not what I was expecting to be dealing with this morning at all.
No, well, I'm grateful to you for your time and your attention, Anthony. Take care and do stay safe. It is approaching 12 noon. One witness telling reporters at the scene that the police gave the suspect, as Andy's explained already, a couple of warnings. He didn't appear to listen, so they opened fire. It's the Heaton Park Synagogue in the Crumpsall area of Manchester, and it was at 9:31 this morning that a member of the public called the police to say they had witnessed a car being driven towards members of the public and one man being stabbed. So the four injuries that unfolded, the injuries are either sustained by the vehicle or by stabbing, or I suppose by both. But until families have been fully appraised of the situation, we, the public, can't expect any further details of that to be shared. It's just gone 12 noon, and you are listening to James O'Brien and Andy Hughes on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, at least four people have been injured in a car and stabbing attack outside a synagogue in Greater Manchester. A suspect was shot by police shortly after 9:30 this morning, and the mayor, Andy Burnham, says it's believed he was killed. LBC's reporter Jess Reeves is in Crumpsall.
I'm just round the side of Middleton Road now, where the street is full of police officers and cars. I'm sure you can hear them behind me. A white bomb disposal van has just passed us, and there's just been armed police officers actually just ushering groups of people down the road. There's a police helicopter actually circling above me as we speak. Police officers are carrying machine guns and standing just outside of the police tape. So far, what we know is Greater Manchester Police have said that a suspect has been shot and four people have been injured caused by a vehicle and stabbings.
Sir Keir Starmer is returning home early from a meeting of European leaders in Denmark. He's described the incident as all the more horrific because it's Yom Kippur, the holiest day in the Jewish calendar. The Prime Minister's been speaking to reporters in Copenhagen in the last half hour.
The attack in Manchester this morning is absolutely shocking, and all of our thoughts are with those affected. I'm on my way back to London. When I arrive, I will chair an emergency COBRA meeting. I'm already able to say that additional police assets are being deployed to synagogues across the country, and we will do everything to keep our Jewish community safe. I've spoken to Mark Gardner of the CST and Andy Burnham, Mayor of Manchester, and I want to thank the emergency services for the speed of their response.
LBC's crime correspondent Andy Hughes has been assessing the response by Greater Manchester Police.
GMP have declared a Plato major incident. That basically is code word for respond as if it is a marauding terror attack. So all resources will be being poured into this, and the first priority is to look after the victims, and then they will be looking straight away. Is this a one-off attack, or is this part of a wider plot? That's exactly what they'll be looking into right now.
Stay with LBC for the latest. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 94.54. That is up 8. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 14. LBC weather, cloudy with rain for many, but drier in southeast England. A high of 20 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 12 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we will continue with our rolling coverage of events in Manchester after a vehicle was driven into a small crowd of people outside a synagogue in the Crumpsall area of the city. Shortly after 9 o'clock this morning, the call made to the police to report the incident at 9:31, and the gunshots, which we believe were responsible for killing the suspect in this case, so far as we know, the only suspect, were heard to ring out at about 9:38. The major incident declared at 9:37. Firearms officers deployed to the scene at 9:34. So an almost unbelievable speed of response. Chris Chambers has arrived at the scene for LBC in Crumpsall in Manchester. What have you discovered since you got there, Chris, and what can you see currently?
Afternoon, James. Yeah, we've got a police helicopter just circling above us at the moment. A number of other helicopters we've seen leaving the area as well. The police are continuing to move the cordon back. We've got a big bank of press here, as you can imagine. There are a lot of people who've come out to the cordon to see what's going on. It's got a fire engine that's trying to get through the cordon here, so try not to get myself run over by that as it comes through. But basically, what we're trying to work out at the moment is what are the actual facts. There's plenty of talk in these situations where we try and get a sense of what might have happened. As you mentioned there are certain facts that we know for sure about this happening at 9:31. Armed police deployed at 9:34 and in position at 9:38, which is, you know, a swift response. The area around this synagogue in Crumpsall, which is the north end of Manchester, swamped by dozens of police vehicles. We've got fire and ambulance crews, the force helicopters overhead, as you can hear. Streets surrounding this synagogue have been cordoned off, police cars up and down. We've got lots of unmarked vehicles as well with their blue lights flashing, and police officers, some in combat gear and carrying machine guns, seen alongside the cordon as well. A number of black unmarked 4x4s, fans carrying plainclothes officers with face coverings on, in and out of this cordon at the moment. And we did have a white lorry marked bomb disposal, which has arrived at the scene in the last half an hour or so, gone behind the cordon outside the synagogue. And this, we believe to be linked to a video which has been shared on social media, which I think you were touching on just earlier. An onlooker being heard to say that the suspect has got a bomb on him and appears to be trying to press a button to detonate it. It says, He's going to blow himself up. He's trying to press the button. And at this point, the person's heard to say, before there is then a sound of a gunshot and the person falling to the ground. Now, obviously, there's this period in time, which I think Andy was alluding to just earlier, where maybe conversations are taking place with families of those four people that we know have been injured, and we try and establish a few more facts as well, so not to just speculate. But
of course,
the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, has been speaking. She said, horrified by the news of this attack at a synagogue in Manchester today on the holiest day in the Jewish calendar, Yom Kippur. She says, my first thoughts are with the victims, our brave police and emergency services. She says, being kept updated by Greater Manchester Police, and they urge people to follow the advice of the emergency services. And that advice has been to stay away from this area at the moment whilst things are still going on. Obviously trying to work out who this person involved is, who was, at the front of this and who's been shot. We're still waiting to find out who that might be, what their background is. And again, as Andy was saying earlier, there will be a real look at whether this person is known to the emergency services and to counter-terror.
Chris Chambers, thank you so much. We'll talk again, I suspect, before this hour is out. Andy, I think the Manchester Evening News have gone a little further on the condition of the suspect.
Well, they are saying that the suspect has died. They're also saying that one member of the public has died, and a second member of the public is also fighting for life in hospital. The condition of the other two victims is not yet known, but if that is true, then that is, of course, terribly a sad development.
Indeed it is, and also a grim and poignant reminder of why contacting families at the moment will be the priority rather than satisfying the curiosity of the public or indeed the media. 8 minutes after 12 is the time you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Chris Chambers a moment ago mentioned the other emergency services. I think it would be reasonable to respond to Harry's request to the programme as a serving paramedic. He wants me to highlight how firefighters will now also be attending, because you, like me, may have been a little confused as to the presence of fire appliances at the scene, which our eyewitness Anthony told us about over an hour ago now. But it is partly a response to findings from the inquiry into the Manchester bombings. Firefighters can now provide basic first aid and triage casualty. 10-second triage now up and running. Police, firefighters and paramedics all act as first on scene to triage. Perpetrators will also be considered a victim of a shooting, so that will be happening there. The emergency services will make every effort to save his or her life alongside the people that have been victims of violence, and that is, Harry suggests, as it should be. I'm expecting to talk to the Member of Parliament for the area, Graham Stringer, in about 5 or 6 minutes' time, as is inevitable at times like this. The wait for more information is something over which we have no control. Some very moving footage being shown on one television station, just of a bystander who's obviously been very, very worried about a family member or a close friend, and spotting them coming through the cordon and rushing over to embrace them enthusiastically. And there will be a lot of fear among people directly linked to this synagogue and this congregation, as well as, of course, fear among the broader Jewish community in this country. And it is to that fact that both Keir Starmer and Sadiq Khan spoke earlier when they confirmed that security at synagogues across the United Kingdom will be increased. 10 minutes after 12 is the time. Triage, forgive me. Some days I can laugh at your correcting of my pronunciations, other days it would feel horribly inappropriate, and today is obviously very much in the second category. Triage is the process that Harry was describing to us a moment ago. And Andy, if, as you say, reports that one of the members of the public present has died, it doesn't actually change anything in policing terms, but it does perhaps remind the likes of you and me and people listening to this that our thirst for more knowledge is not a priority for any of the security services or officers of the law on the ground in Manchester at the moment.
Not at all. Their first priority is finding out more about the suspect, then finding out about the victims, what's happened to them, and if the worst has happened, then they need to go through the process of contacting their families. Just the same way as everyone saying that this is a terror attack. Yes, it may well be, and we know that Greater Manchester Police and the Northwest Counterterrorism Unit are looking into this. But as of now, the Counterterrorism Police still haven't declared this officially a terrorism incident. I'm guessing that may change.
Indeed, and if and when it does, we'll bring it to your attention immediately. Speaking of counterterrorism, Nick Aldworth is a former Detective Chief Superintendent in counterterrorism policing. He joins me on the line now. Nick, what will your former colleagues be most concerned about at this precise moment?
Well, in counterterrorism policing colleagues, they were most concerned about whether this individual's acted alone or whether they're part of a wider network that may have an enduring threat to there or somewhere else in the UK. They will be less concerned in terms of the practice of resolving what's going on at the incident and taking the wider view alongside their colleagues in the British security services.
Got it. And how do they go about establishing those possible links and associations?
Well, it starts usually with identifying the individual, if that's possible, and there's obviously lots of ways of doing that, you know, visually, biometrically. Quite often, people who conduct these attacks will carry items of identification with them.
Right.
They'll be looking to see whether there are or whether it is electronic or digital devices that can be exploited and looked at. They'll be looking to see if they have identified the individual, whether they've left any sort of martyrdom message, which is not uncommon. Lots and lots of rapid research into every clue that they can get from having identified an individual to then where that takes them.
And the people at the scene, as you say, the officers at the scene will be involved in a very different operation. How quickly would you expect, I mean, in the event of identification of the suspect, how quickly would you expect former colleagues to be able to say that he is or is not part of a broader network?
That is a little bit of how long's a piece of string.
Yeah, I thought
because
it might be.
They may find connections that they need to research to start with. And when you think about previous terror attacks, the individuals who conducted the Manchester Arena bombing had quite an extensive network of associates, but there wasn't an ongoing threat from them, as it turned out to be. But they very well could have been. So they will look for those immediate threats. And then try and work their way as quick as they can through that entire network of associates. It takes a while.
And finally, Nick, a word, if you would, on the speed with which this response has unfolded. At 9.31, a call made by a member of the public. 9.38, gunshots ringing out outside the synagogue.
Yeah, I mean, look, we should be very proud that we have police officers in the UK who are prepared to put themselves in harm's way to protect others. The speed of that response reflects similar responses. I mean, London Bridge attack in 2017 was, I think, 6 to 8 minutes between inception and neutralisation of the threat. Greater Manchester Police, like other police services, since about 2015 and the Bataclan attack in Paris, expanded their ability both in terms of numbers of resources and the things that those resources could do to ensure that we could respond to these sorts of incidents quickly. So it sounds to me like Greater Manchester Police rather, have had the right resources available. The other thing just to bear in mind is that there is always a comprehensive policing operation put around High Holy Days. I used to lead it in London, had counterparts leading in Manchester. And we are aware that history shows us that the Jewish community tends to be at greater threat during some of those periods. So it may well be that that response was part of a planned response protecting the Jewish community.
Oh, I see. I didn't know that. And yet, of course, as you explain it makes perfect sense. Nick, thank you. Nick Aldworth, former Detective Chief Superintendent in Counterterrorism Policing. Andy Hughes, LBC's crime correspondent, is still with me.
Yes, Greater Manchester Police have now confirmed that two of the victims have now died following the major incident. And a third person, a man believed to be the offender, was also shot by firearms officers and is believed to be deceased. In a statement, they said, "We know today's horrifying attack on the Jewish community's holiest day will have caused significant shock and fear throughout all our communities. We are grateful to the member of the public whose quick response to what they witnessed outside our swift action. And as a result, the offender was prevented from entering the synagogue. We remain in direct contact with all synagogues across Greater Manchester to provide reassurance. And this will continue for as long as needed. We will continue to provide updates as we can."
I would add that the Casualty Bureau opened at 12 p.m. today, the Greater Manchester Police have told us, just in the last 16 minutes. And if you wanted to contact that office, the number is 0800 056 0153. Members of the public still advised to avoid the area while the police continue to deal with the situation. The time now is 12:17.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the LBC app.
It's right up here in the London Eye.
But imagine being inside. Perfect panoramic views of the capital from iconic pods.
Then get two Sun Super Days tickets to the London Eye. 34,000 available from £19 and thousands on the Sun for free.
Pick up the paper this Saturday to start collecting. Only in the Sun.
T's and C's apply. Even for seagulls.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep. Where babies are made a fuss of. Aww. Where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts. And where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters. On your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
18 minutes after 12 is the time. You're listening to LBC, where the attack on a synagogue in Manchester earlier today continues to dominate and indeed demand our attention. The events taking a tragic, even more tragic turn a few moments ago when it was confirmed two people have died following this incident outside the Heaton Park Hebrew Congregation Synagogue on Middleton Road in Crumpsall. A third person believed to be the offender, also believed to be deceased, although not confirmed because of items on his person the bomb squad continues to examine. He, of course, was shot by Greater Manchester Police firearms officers. Graham Stringer is the MP for Blakely and Middleton South. Crumpsall falls within his constituency, and Graham joins me now. Well, Graham, I'm asking everybody what they know, and the short answer to that is no more than is publicly available. So tell us, if you can, what you know about the community, what you know about this part of Manchester, and indeed perhaps this synagogue.
I've lived in that part of Manchester for most of my adult life. The road that runs next to the synagogue, Wilton Road, I lived on that road for a period of time, and just over Middleton Road for nearly 25 years after that. So I know the synagogue really well. I know the people. I know many of them by their first names. I've done hustings in general elections in the synagogue, been to services, talked to people about problems between the communities there. So I know it really, really well. It's a good community who reach out to other communities to improve relationships. There are strong Jewish-Muslim groups, other strong interfaith groups that work hard to understanding and tolerance in the community. So I would be appalled at this event anywhere in the constituency or the country, but I'm particularly upset because I know this congregation quite well.
And presumably you've been reaching out to members of it all morning.
Well, no, it's Yom Kippur, so phones aren't being, wouldn't be answered. They wouldn't be phoning me, I guess, and I am guessing. That many members of the Jewish community who weren't in that synagogue don't know it's happened yet. Although bad news does travel quickly.
Because of the requirements of avoiding technology or yes. Sort of any form of exertion.
Yes, that's right.
I hadn't thought of that, people may still be in the dark. What do you see your role as in the coming hours and days, Graham?
Well, I sadly, this is not the first time there's been an appalling event like this. The biggest and worst one was in the general election in 2017 when there was a Manchester bomb. Mm-hmm. And my role then and the community's role was to make sure that these evil people don't destroy what is a very tolerant, harmonious community in Manchester where different religious groups and different people from different ethnic backgrounds work hard for understanding, tolerance and harmony. And making sure that happens, not just by people saying we're tolerant and we believe in being tolerant, by actually going out and understanding other communities. And all religious communities do it. When the bomb went off, I was leaflessing for the general election. Well, just after the bomb went off, I was leaflessing outside a mosque. The imam came out, expressed his sorrow. There were Christians there giving out roses. When there was a big event, a service in the centre of Manchester afterwards, the Hindus were clapped into Albert Square. Muslims were there. There was a real effort made then and afterwards to make sure these dreadful evil people don't destroy relationships between communities and don't breed intolerance and conflict and anger.
It's an important reminder. You describe a determination not to be divided or indeed to be terrorised, which, while we await further details of whatever the motivation of this character may have been, it's important to remember what the desires of terrorists often involved, because it's the opposite of what you've just described, fellow feeling.
It is. It is so disharmony and anger amongst different communities. And there is no doubt that since the Gaza war started, the Jewish community have suffered more attacks. The Community Security Trust, the Jewish organization that looks after security in the Jewish community, have estimated, I think, a 400% increase in attacks since the start of the Gaza conflict. So the Jewish community, in one sense, this isn't a surprise, it's dreadful, but the Jewish community cooperates with the Greater Manchester Police and they provide their own security, tragically, in a way. When I drive, there's a very large Jewish school, King David, just round the corner. Yes. And it upsets me every time I walk past. And I see security guards guarding children. And there are guards on all the synagogues. But that's a particularly awful symbol, I think.
Yes, actually, we had an eyewitness at the scene earlier who I think attended the school. Well, we spoke to a young man earlier who attended the school and reflected on precisely what you described, that sort of permanent reminder of the circumstances in which these children are now being educated. Finally, if you could, on that subject, Graham, what is the sort of security situation at the synagogue? I didn't realise you knew it so well, so personally. We've heard from one former officer that it would have been at a slightly higher level, given the fact that today is Yom Kippur. But it's a constant presence that you're describing.
Yes. I pass that synagogue most Saturday mornings, and there is always one security guard on the front on Middleton Road. I wouldn't be surprised if that hadn't been increased, given the increasing level of attacks there have been and the anger that there is in many communities about what's happened in Gaza and people irrationally trying to take that out on people living peacefully in Manchester.
Indeed. Graham Stringer, many thanks. Labour MP for Blakely and Middleton South, reflecting upon an area of his constituency and indeed members of his community that he knows clearly very well, and reminding me, actually, that, of course, given the requirements of Yom Kippur, particularly for more traditional or orthodox members of a congregation, there will be some people in the Jewish community in Manchester still unaware of what has been unfolding all morning. The wait for further information, notwithstanding Andy Hughes, the fact that two people are now known to have died changes very little, except our emotions and our sense of loss.
Yeah, of course, and of course, just for the families of the victims. But you're absolutely right in terms of the police operation and the investigation.
Exclusively, I'm talking about the police operation.
Yeah, of course. It changes nothing, and all they will be thinking about right now is finding out: A, is this a lone attack? And B, if it isn't, how can they prevent a further attack? And every attempt will be made by all of the different agencies and all the different elements of the security services makeup to find out who this man is, who his connections are, what his background is, has he been abroad? Where did he learn to do this? What's the inspiration? All this will be going on now at a frantic pace.
And I think, as one of our guests explained earlier or suggested earlier, some of the questions that we're tempted to ask at times like this do get filed under how long is a piece of string. So putting a time scale on when that kind of information may emerge it's a fool's errand, isn't it? I think you have some reason to think that there may have been some admirable conduct on the ground in the immediate moment.
Yeah. So GMP, the thing that stood out for me is that they thanked a member of the public, and they said, "We are grateful to him, to the member of the public whose quick response to what they witnessed allowed our swift action, and as a result, the offender was prevented from entering the synagogue." Listen, we don't know the details, but this suggests that this may be something more than a phone call. We know that the police response was extraordinarily quick. And what happened, the reason it may be quick, is how in built-up city areas like Manchester, London, Birmingham, what have you, firearms officers are constantly patrolling the streets. They are just basically on shift, and they're making sure that all parts of the city is covered if something like this happens. And it suggests that a firearms team must have just been around the corner when this call was made. Because that's an extraordinarily quick response. But they do this for a reason. I've been out with these firearms teams myself. A lot of the job is very mundane, because you're just driving around waiting for that call to happen.
Right.
And if that call comes in, it all changes. And the response is extraordinary. They just switch from, you know, talking about what they're going to be having for dinner into these absolute machines.
And 99 days out of 100, they won't be doing anything except having
more
dinner.
More than that, yeah.
Much more. That's a fascinating insight. I won't have occurred to many people listening. I'm sort of reminded of in some ways, the definition of some elements of public service, public duty, and indeed the public sector, is that they are there in case we need them. But it's a good day when we don't.
Absolutely. I've been along to the training of these firearms officers and the counter-terrorism firearms officers. It takes place in Gravesend, and what the instructors do and how they are taught to do what they do is they might just be having a cup of tea, and then all of a sudden everything will change and you will just hear shots out of nowhere.
Wow.
And then they will then have to respond. So they are constantly trained to just click into action in a moment.
To be on hypervigilance, almost, high alert, constantly. On that subject, who and how is the decision taken to discharge a firearm, to actually shoot a suspect?
So, really, it's up to the officer. But what happens is they are in constant contact to a control room. The control room will send them there, and then the control room would have told the officers who were on their way there that there is a man, there is a man that appears to be trying to get into a synagogue, and he appears to have what looks like a suicide vest. Therefore, I am authorizing you to shoot on sight. And it will be then up to the officer to make that decision. That's what they're trained to do. And what they're trained to do is shoot to kill. They're not trained to shoot to incapacitate. They're trained to shoot to kill.
That will be contingent upon the belief that he's wearing an explosive vest.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
As you suggested earlier, if it turns out not to be real...
That doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter at all, for obvious reasons, but it is designed then because there's a desire to be killed.
Exactly, yes, yeah. This happened at the Fishmongers Hall attack.
Yes.
This happened at the London Bridge attack, where all the attackers were wearing what appeared to be a suicide vest, yet when they were then shot dead, they realised that it was fake. And as I said, the majority of these vests are fake because the process and the complexities of actually making a live one is very hard to do.
Thank you, Andy Hughes, LBC's crime correspondent. And it is, I think, perhaps a moment to reflect upon the fact that we began our time together this morning at 10 o'clock discussing some of the worst examples of the police service, some of the very worst of them. And as the morning has unfolded and developed, we find ourselves reflecting upon the conduct and the courage of some of the very best of them, all in the space of a single morning and a single radio programme. The time now is 12:32. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Two people have died in a car and stabbing attack outside a synagogue in Greater Manchester. A third person, believed to be the suspect, is understood to be dead after being shot by police around 9:30 this morning. Officers say the man's condition can't be confirmed due to safety issues, with the bomb disposal unit now at the scene. Sir Keir Starmer is travelling back early from a summit in Denmark. He's described the incident as all the more horrific because it's Yom Kippur, the holiest day in the Jewish calendar.
The attack in Manchester this morning is absolutely shocking, and all of our thoughts are with those affected. I'm on my way back to London. When I arrive, I will chair an emergency COBRA meeting. I'm already able to say that additional police assets are being deployed to synagogues across the country.
The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has described the incident in Crumpsall as a vile and disgusting attack. Stay with LBC for the latest. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for many, drier in the southeast of England, highs of 20 degrees.
LBC.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Don't leave it to the last minute. Buy your advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern. At Pets in a Pickle, we know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. All the time the cat tested his 9 lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
The advert looked genuine. A post from a household name, experts in money, a hot opportunity. They asked for a small amount, promised a great return, took all I had, and then disappeared. Investment scammers are highly sophisticated, and every month CEL talk to thousands of people like you who've fallen victim. Our experts can help recover your money, so head to celsolicitors.co.uk today.
CEL. Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quarter Pillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And 4 giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sunrise, oh, na, 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 na,
oh. Book now at nutcatch.com.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 25 minutes to one, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. The King, as you've heard, issuing a statement describing how deeply shocked and saddened he and Queen Camilla are to hear about the attack in Manchester, especially, he added, on such a significant day for the Jewish community. Our thoughts and prayers are with all those affected by this appalling incident, and we greatly appreciate the swift actions of the emergency services. In fact, it mirrors a message I just read from an old pal of mine talking about the speed with which the Greater Manchester Police appear to have prevented more people from being hurt, and adding something that I didn't know, that this mosque was the mosque attended by his own grandparents. He also offers some advice to all of us, which is, if you have a Jewish friend, neighbour or colleague, then send them a text rather than simply saying something on social media. Most British Jews, he reminds me, won't be active on social media today, but they will see your message when they switch their phones back on this evening. I thought that that might be helpful. 12:36 is the time. Andy is still with me. Andy Hughes, LBC's crime correspondent. A slightly unexpected development, Andy, or at least a notable one.
Yeah, a notable in the sense that you don't see them often, but special forces have now been deployed in Manchester, and I might be wrong because they work in the shadows, but I believe the last time they were deployed at such an event was in 2017 at the London Bridge terror attack. What will they be doing? Well, they're experts in searching, and they will be making sure that there are no further threats, and if there are, they will deal with them.
It couldn't be routine. I mean, does their presence speak to intelligence, or could it simply be a belt and braces?
Could be either, to be honest.
Right, fair enough. 12:37 is the time. Let's go back to Crumpsall. Liam Gotting is there outside the synagogue, and he joins me now. Liam, what's the mood there now that people have discovered that their worst fears have been realised? Two families presumably in the process now of dealing with the worst imaginable news, and yet still an awful lot of uncertainty surrounding the events of earlier this morning. What is the scene outside the synagogue at this moment?
Yeah, absolutely, James. I mean, you felt the atmosphere just change really very quickly. It was very chaotic, but once that news started to filter through that two people had been confirmed as dead, three others still in serious conditions, it felt like that chaos almost sort of came to a bit of a close, and it's a really more subdued, somber, just a sad atmosphere here now. I'm looking around, there are still people in tears, you know, hugging each other. People have gone out their Hebrew Bibles and have begun reading passages of the Hebrew Bible as well since that news broke here. So certainly a massive change in the atmosphere. A statement from GMP from Greater Manchester Police about 20 minutes ago said that we can confirm two people have died following the major incident outside the Heaton Park Hebrew Congregation synagogue. A third person, a man believed to be the offender, was shot by GMP firearms officers and is also believed to be deceased. It cannot currently be confirmed due to safety issues surrounding suspicious items on his person, but the bomb disposal unit has been called and is now at the scene, and three other members of the public remain in a serious condition. So, James, you have people here obviously still wanting answers, still speaking to each other, trying to make sense of what we are seeing and what we're hearing here, but certainly the atmosphere in the last sort of 20 minutes has massively changed.
And are there any police officers dealing with media inquiries? Is there a point of contact for people like you to find out, I mean, in the moment or in real time, what they're discovering? I'm presuming not, but I thought I'd check.
No, none at the minute. I mean, there's lots of officers stood right here in front of us, obviously sort of patrolling the cordon area, but of course they're not going to say anything to us at the minute. We're being kept updated by the forces press office at their HQ, but at the minute no one on site sort of giving us real-time updates as they're happening.
Liam, we may speak again. Thank you for your time. 12:40 is the time. Liam Gotting there outside the synagogue in Crumpsall in Manchester. I don't know which of the words you will remember most from today's coverage, but the thoughts, of course, go to the two families who are dealing with the worst imaginable news. The police confirming not long ago that two people have died following this incident outside the Heaton Park Hebrew Congregation synagogue. A third person, as Liam reminded, is believed to be the offender, shot by firearms officers, also believed to be deceased. But the knowledge that some people will be currently processing the news that they have lost a loved one is something that I think, can give us all pause. Chris Chambers, also on the scene in Crumpsall, has been speaking to a local person.
I just heard noises and sirens and helicopters. I live across the road.
And how were you feeling when all this was going on?
A bit nervous. But my husband's over there, so thank God I'm okay, I'm with him, and yeah. Please God everybody will be okay.
And you're surrounded by people here, and you are safe.
Yeah, thank God. But we're safe in God's hands, that's why we're safe.
How do you feel about the timing of what's happened here?
Well, it's a very auspicious day for us. It's Yom Kippur, which is the highest holy day. We're fasting. We fasted from 6:30 last night, and it's a day you want to be in the synagogue to pray.
How significant is this day for your community?
Very significant, because it is the highest holy day, and like I said, we're all fasting. And it's a very time of year where everybody's busy with their own things. We had the Jewish New Year last week, and we've got Pentecost next week.
Chris Chambers there, speaking to a member of the community and I think the congregation, although not present at the synagogue when this event unfolded earlier. For people not familiar with Yom Kippur, the synagogue will be open all day. Prayers will be unfolding all day. As you heard, members of the congregation will be fasting as well. But the tradition is to make your way there almost as you please, to attend some of the prayers and to commune with some of the fellow members of the congregation throughout the day, not for a sort of specific, self-contained, short religious service. But the significance of the day really can't be exaggerated, the most significant day in the calendar. And Chris has been speaking to a few people in the area, and I don't think you'll be surprised to learn that they all reflect very similar sense of shock and horror.
The police wouldn't let me out the front door. Later they knocked on our door, told us we have to evacuate from our flat. We live right across from the synagogue. At first they evacuated us to Betwood, which is a bit further up, but now they've just evacuated us further. From what I get from my contacts, was that a shooting and was a stabbing and a car ram at the same time. But, I mean, from what you can see, there must be something else. The bomb squad tactical aid unit, which is not usual in a regular terrorist attack.
It's coming up to 12:44. The word terrorist inevitably appears in coverage, and it certainly appears to fit all of the facts as we have them. Andy, what are the rules, as it were, for applying that term definitively?
Well, it comes down to the motive. And if the motive is politically driven, and if your intent is to cause violence for that purpose, then it then crosses the threshold into terrorism.
So that can't be established in the moment, however compelling the visual evidence may be.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you look at what's happening here and you look at what's unfolding. It pretty much ticks every single box that you would expect of a terror attack. What is happening right now? Well, Greater Manchester Police are still in control at the scene, but counter-terrorism officers from the Northwest Counter-Terrorism Unit, they will be have all over this, and they will be constantly relaying things to Counter-Terror Command. They maintain overall control, whether it be a terror attack, and that will then be assessed with MI5 and MI6.
So no surprise or significance to be attached to the... essentially no further information or detail has been established really since the incident was first reported, since the very first we heard of it. There's no surprise or significance to that.
No,
fact.
That's entirely normal. That has happened in pretty much every single terror attack that has happened in this country in the last decade. So this takes... They never announce it this early, but you just have to look at what's going on.
12:45 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The attack on British Jews at their synagogue in Manchester is the predictable result of every shout to globalise the Intifada. Well done to the shouters. You got what you wanted. Now what?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are the 7th and 8th of October. 2 days of big deals on electronics, home, kitchen and more. That'll make you feel less like... and more like... feel like a big deal. Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are the 7th and 8th of October. Exclusively for Prime members. Join Prime now.
Get your own UK-based account manager, a beekeeper, for support with PensionBee. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
The Monopoly game at McDonald's is back. And with a 1 in 4 chance to win instantly on pack, you could get your hands on a £2,000 Jet 2 holiday, a Big Mac, Merlin annual passes for four, and even more epic prizes. Go on, it's your go. 18 plus, UK, ends 21st of October. Selected menu items, subject to availability. App may be required. See mcdrules.co.uk.
With a gift in your will to UNICEF, you'll know that the job of making a better world for every child is in good hands. It'll be the start of an incredible journey, connecting you with a powerful community of people working tirelessly to protect and nurture children so they're empowered to take on the world. To find out more about leaving a gift in your will that never stops working for children, search UNICEF Legacy for a free guide today.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Don't leave it to the last minute. Buy your advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern.
It's right up here in the London Eye.
But imagine being inside. Perfect panoramic views of the capital from iconic pods.
Then get 2 Sun Super Day stickers to the London Eye. 34,000 available from £19 and thousands on the Sun for free.
Pick up the paper this Saturday to start collecting. Only in the Sun.
T's and C's apply. Even for seagulls.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 12:48. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the appalling events in Manchester this morning continue to dominate our programming on LBC. My thanks to all of my colleagues and guests for helping me steer through these hideous waters. It's not really something that you can prepare for. And the same, of course, is true for the people charged with investigating. I will tell you what Greater Manchester Police is saying, because I think it matters. And I've been really struck and a little bit shaken, actually, by that message reminding me that many Jewish people won't even have their phones on for the duration of Yom Kippur. So, you know, that the dissemination of information becomes doubly difficult given the religious requirements of this holy day. But nonetheless, Greater Manchester Police is urging people who are worried about family or friends being involved potentially in today's incident to call the Casualty Bureau. And if you know anyone to whom this information might be useful, I would urge you to share it with them on 0800 056 0154. I'll read that again. There's also an online form that you can access via Greater Manchester Police's website or indeed Twitter feed. That's the Heaton Park Hebrew Congregation Synagogue. I think I may have misspoken a moment ago and referred to a mosque, which is, I guess, an indication of how fraught things are in the studio. 0800 056 0154 is the number that you need. If you were involved in today's incident and are safe, then please make a report online. Also, perhaps let friends and family know. This will assist with information assessment and relieve pressure on Casualty Bureau, who may be receiving a higher volume of contact from the public. And if you have any other information that may assist the police investigation, or if you took photos or videos of the incident, then do please contact us on the same contact details. Casualty Bureau is to report someone believed to be involved in the incident, to cancel someone previously reported as possibly being involved, or to provide any offers of assistance or information in relation to the incident. We cannot provide any information to the public about the incident, so do not ring that number in pursuit of information. It is simply a means, a method of collating and collecting data, whether or not it's the identity of individuals potentially caught up in these events or information that may be of use to the investigators. That number, once again, is 0800 056 0154. Andy Hughes, LBC's crime correspondent, is still with me. We'll catch up with him shortly. But first, I thought we might listen again to Bradley, who lives very near the area, whose father was on his way to synagogue when this news broke, and who attended the school that Graham Stringer, the local MP, was talking to us about a little later in the programme. You may not have heard this the first time round. Anthony was on the scene and called us more or less immediately, and Bradley shortly afterwards was able to provide a little bit more cultural and community context to the scene of this appalling tragedy.
It's shocking because Manchester, you went to uni here, so you know roughly the geography of Crumpsall and Cheetham Hill. So we live in Wackford, and I'm a lapsed Jew. I don't go anywhere near, but I do go on Yom Kippur. Right. And my father had just left for shul, and we get a phone call saying that this attack had happened literally a couple of seconds before he went. Now, we do have relatives that...
Was he heading to that synagogue, or was he going to...
So he was going to Whitefield, but we do have relatives that were heading towards... Because Yom Kippur is a day, you know, you can kind of drift in and out. It's an all-day.
Can you tell us a bit about that for non-Jewish people or people not familiar with your faith listening? You made it to me as a Catholic. It sounds a bit like Christmas. You're going to go at Christmas, but not for the rest of the year. You're going to go at Yom Kippur, but not for the rest of the year. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, that's absolutely a fair comment. I mean, even some Yom Kippurs I don't go, depending on work. But yeah, I mean, invariably, that's the day that if you were going to go, and for me, it's a little bit... Well, I'll go for my mum and dad because
I get it.
It's just a nice thing to do. So yeah, it's similar to going on Christmas Eve. So yeah, we would head out for that day. And as I said, you would go at any point. You don't have to go. There's not a set start, a set finish. You would wander in for a couple of hours, speak to a few people, and then off you go. So you know, people will drift in and out during that day, I suppose.
So you've been. I mean, you're probably. Got people who'd be attending shul at that synagogue then, given your geography.
I mean, my mum and dad were married there.
Gosh.
And I went to school in King David, which is, you know, a couple hundred yards away. And, you know, if you look at that school now and you look at the amazing work that CFT did, that school at King David, which is just literally around the corner, looks like an open prison. You've got massive iron gates that run all the way through it. You've got constant 24-hour security. It's deeply worrying. And anti-Semitism, unfortunately, is one of the only types of hatred which spans both the far left and the far right. So we
that's
are in a
very true.
Position to say, well, you know, that's why you can't speculate where this comes from, but we are in a really unique situation. And, you know, obviously with the situation in Gaza and, you know, I'm no fan of Netanyahu, but it's such a tricky time.
It is a tricky time, and I'm going to be understandably cautious about anybody going down the sort of broader geopolitical path at the moment, although I completely, I'm not by any stretch of the imagination admonishing you, and just reminding everybody listening that the facts are by far the most important element of this unfolding conversation. But there's a couple of other things you could help me with, if you don't mind. Would people take their phones with them, for example, to shul?
It's an interesting one, because when I was growing up, no, you couldn't carry anything. Now, there is this really odd thing that they do now in certain synagogues where they run this kind of wire around a certain... They do it in Leicester Road and the really slum parts of Salford, where they run this kind of wine. They do it in Wyckford, actually. They run this wine. I don't know what it's called. I'm sure somebody the farmer understand will know it. They run this wine around a certain area, which allows you, I don't know how it works, to carry items into the synagogue. So I would imagine nowadays, in 2025,
right,
there's certain synagogues that have this. Yes, you would be allowed to carry your phone in, but when I was growing up, no, not in the 80s or 90s, you weren't allowed to carry anything. But now...
Well, so it may depend on the individual, then. A traditionalist would probably not want to take... So there will be families, of course, worried about their loved ones for injuries that we know about, and there may be some difficulty for family members to actually confirm whether or not their loved ones, their relatives, have been caught up in this violence.
It's amazing that was at Mum and Dad's house, and they had a house phone, and it's still... I mean, I'm 48 now, and I don't have a landline, but the amount of phone calls that were coming into my mum on that phone from lots of people that live close, that live in, you know, that's the one thing about being in the Jewish community in Whiteford, it's so close-knit that she must have had 15, 20 calls this morning within the space of half an hour from people all over Whitefield, all over Prestwich, all over Manchester, telling her what's happening.
Because they know it's on your doorstep. Just to be clear, Brad, your dad's okay.
Dad's okay. I mean, Whitefield, again, they've got full-time CFT. They do an incredible job, by the way, those guys that stand there. And I think the training now that they do, and I know a couple of people used to do it, has obviously come to fruition because the worst possible case scenario has happened today.
Indeed it has. I should probably remind you that conversation took place earlier, before the deaths of two of the victims in Manchester had been confirmed, and that is where we are now. There's a greeting, I think, among Jews on Yom Kippur, which assumes a particular poignancy in the event of what's happened this morning. May your name be sealed in the book of life, which I thought I'd share with you as the end of this programme approaches. Andy Hughes has been with me for most of the morning. A final word, if you would, Andy, on what is likely to happen at the COBRA meeting that the Prime Minister will be chairing later this afternoon.
Well, this will be a chance for all of the different agencies and the heads of the departments, the Defence Secretary, the Home Secretary, the Prime Minister, to speak with MI6, MI5, Counterterrorism Policing and GCHQ, and they will come forward with a strategy for the coming hours and the current in the coming days. Also, what will be discussed is the terrorism threat level. Now, we've been at substantial for the last 3 years, which means an attack is likely. Sometimes what happens after this is that threat level is raised, and if it is raised, it would be too severe, which means an attack is highly likely.
And the top priority hasn't changed since you arrived in the studio earlier today. It is establishing whether or not this culprit has any associations and whether or not the security services had any prior knowledge of him.
That's the number one objective, to find out as much as possible as they can about this suspect and find out if he is a lone wolf or if he is acting as part of a group. That is the number one priority.
Andy, thank you for all your help in the course of this programme. That string that Bradley referred to a moment ago is called an error. Lots of people texting me to point that out, although we did point it out the first time round when we spoke to Bradley originally, but I'm happy to clarify that. That is it from me for today. If you missed any of today's show, you can, of course, listen back on Catch Up on both Global Player and the LBC app, although I suspect we'll be continuing with the rolling news moving forward. So staying up to date on the top stories and opinions probably today involves staying tuned into LBC. But do download the app from your app store now. It's free and it allows you to access a range of podcasts as well as our programming. Tom Sawbrick will be with you at 4, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. And Andy, I think you said to James a moment ago, did you, special forces have now been deployed
in
Manchester?
Right.
First time since the London Bridge attack in 2017. Our reporters in Manchester will be live with me throughout the afternoon, updating us on that police operation following the killing of two people. Three other members of the public, we're told by the police, are in a very serious condition after the attack at a synagogue in Manchester. third person beyond the two that we know who've died. The suspect is thought to be dead after police shot him a number of times, but bomb disposal experts are working towards establishing what he has wrapped around his body. That Cobra meeting, as Andy and James mentioned, will take place later. I'll talk to Natasha Clark, our political editor, this afternoon, and a little later we'll hear from Rafi Bloom, who was on his way to the synagogue. He'll tell us about what's led to this attack.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, two people have died in a car and stabbing attack outside a synagogue in Greater Manchester. A third person, believed to be the suspect, is understood to be dead after being shot by police. The man's condition can't be confirmed due to safety issues, with bomb disposal experts now at the scene. LBC's Northwest correspondent Chris Chambers is in Crumpsall with more.
The area around this synagogue in Crumpsall, which is the north end of Manchester, swamped by dozens of police vehicles. We've got fire and ambulance crews, the force helicopters overhead, as you can hear. Streets surrounding this synagogue have been cordoned off, police cars up and down.
Three other members of the public are said to be in a serious condition after the attack earlier this morning. Police say a large number of people were worshipping at the synagogue to mark Yom Kippur, the holiest day in the Jewish calendar. Anthony was in the area and called LBC after he heard shots being fired.
There was three quick succession, one, two, three, and then a load shouting. That's when I realised something's going on, and then I heard another one, and then another one, and then it sounded sure there was another one. So maybe five or six.
Sir Keir Starmer has cut short meetings in Denmark and is flying back to London to chair an emergency Cobra meeting. He's described the attack as appalling.
The attack in Manchester this morning is absolutely shocking, and all of our thoughts are with those affected. I'm already able to say that additional police assets are being deployed to synagogues across the country, and we will do everything to keep our Jewish community safe.
The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has described the incident in Crumpsall as a vile and disgusting attack. The King and Queen say they're deeply shocked by what's happened and have sent their thoughts and prayers to all those affected. Stay with LBC throughout the day for the latest. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 5 at £94.51. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather cloudy without breaks of rain for many. Drier in the southeast of England. Highs of 20 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission. And it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you if you're just joining us here at LBC. Obviously, the investigation ongoing into this dreadful attack in Manchester this morning on a synagogue just after 9:30. That investigation is still very much developing in front of our eyes, so we won't come to too many conclusions, although some sad conclusions can already be drawn. Four people have been seriously injured in a car and stabbing attack at the synagogue. We'll get more from Leon Gotting in just a second, but we do know that the suspect was shot by police. The mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, says that individual is believed to be dead. We know that two other people have been confirmed dead, people who are either at or on their way to the synagogue. There will be a Cobra meeting later this afternoon. The Prime Minister has cut short a trip to Copenhagen, where this morning he was briefed about these events. He returned and there'll be a Cobra meeting, as Andy was just describing to James a few moments ago. All the top level elements of security in this country will be meeting to decide what happens next. What I want to do, two things really this afternoon, is to keep you abreast of events as they unfold and any more information that emerges about this attack, but also to discuss the background to this attack. And I don't mean the background to the individual who carried it out, but the atmosphere in which it has happened. And I'm pretty sure you know what I'm alluding to. The atmosphere in this country that has made it open season on Jewish people in terms of the things people think they can say and some violent people think they can do. This isn't the first physical attack on Jews since October the 7th by any means. And I can already hear people saying to me, what about Gaza? What about Gaza? What about Gaza? Of course, what about Gaza? Of course, we want that war to end. But I'm not going to focus on what about Gaza today. I'm going to focus on what about the UK and what about the relations we have with one another in this country. We can disagree vehemently over the rights, the wrongs, the whys and the wherefores of what's going on in Gaza and in Israel. Of course we can. But none of that, not a bone of it, justifies an attack on a Muslim or an attack on a Jew. None of it. None of it. And the thing I would say to anyone who wants to, what's the word I'm looking for, who wants to dissemble, really, much as we saw on October the 8th, when people started to immediately say, this is just resistance, this is just resistance. They immediately needed their narrative out there. Well, fine, create your own narrative if you want to. But it's very clear to me, very clear to me, that elements of, and remember, I'm saying the word elements of, not everybody who was on the marches, I'm saying elements of those marches. Elements of those marches in plain sight were calling for violence against Jews in this country. When you shout repeatedly, globalize the intifada, you are asking for violence, physical violence against Jews. And in the same way that people say, from the river to the sea is cuddly cozy, it doesn't mean rid the Middle East of Jews. It does mean rid the Middle East of Jews. And for those who say globalise the intifada is just about making people aware of Palestinian resistance, nice try, nonsense. It's about urging people to be violent towards Jews. Well, today you've got what you wanted. Those of you who shouted repeatedly, globalise the intifada, you've got what you wanted. And now what? Now what? For the UK, now what? For our relations. You know, just a day ago, we were discussing the speech given by the Prime Minister, in which he was trying his level best to focus on unity and talk about community in this country. You can't do that if within your community there are people who would murder others because they don't like what's happening in a far-off land that they have connected those people to. They don't like the opinion of somebody about a particular war. It doesn't ever justify killing somebody on their way to a synagogue or a church or a temple or a mosque, ever, never. And if that's not your starting point, I'm not sure I've got much to say to you. So let's talk about that, as well as finding out how this story is developing. So let's go to that first. Liam Gotting, LBC's Northwest correspondent, joins me. Hi, Liam. Can you take us back to what happened and where the police are up to?
Yes, Sheila. So for those who are maybe just joining us now, what we know so far is that this has been declared as a major incident. GMP, Greater Manchester Police, say that they were called to the Heaton Park Hebrew Congregation Synagogue on Middleton Road here in the Crumpsall area, just north of Manchester City Centre, just around after 9:30 this morning by a member of the public who'd said he'd witnessed a car being driven towards members of the public and one man had been stabbed. Firearms officers were deployed just after then, about 5 to 10 this morning, as police were getting more calls saying a security guard had been attacked with a knife. Now, around about an hour ago, we learned via Greater Manchester Police that two people have died following the incident here at the synagogue. A third person, a man believed to be the offender, was shot by Greater Manchester Police firearms officers and is also believed to have died, although Manchester Police say they cannot currently confirm this due to safety issues surrounding suspicious items on his person. We know the bomb disposed